This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
Fuck you guys. Why did you guys get the memo that Control was going to crush us, and we didn't get that fucking memo?
There were three blue-black Control decks in the top 10 of the SCG event.
I know, and like we're looking at it, and I'm just like, my dick is so hard.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play idiot. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mind Flayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some Modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some Modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play Modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, episode 215. Mr. Scotty Mack here, joined, as always, by at least one of my best friends in the entire world, Jay motherfucking Boosh.
Hello, Christopher Robin. What's up?
Hi, Pooh Bear.
Oh, look, it's Piglet.
That's right.
Do you have a balloon? I want to float up to the tree and be like a honeybee.
So, KYT is stuck on a frozen plane.
Boo.
And Jer got held back on a plane because the snowpocalypse hit Canada this weekend.
Snowpocalypse.
And so it is just the two of us tonight, jamming live and in large, or large and in charge for you.
That's right. Robot large even.
Robot large even. That was a nice little shout out.
Yeah. So, yeah. Same old, you know, magic. Podcast.
We're actually very excited to give this a run for you. You know, having the one-man show for 15 minutes last year was real hard.
Yeah.
And I know that Jay has been playing a lot of Magic, and I've been playing a lot of Magic, and there's a lot of Magic to be played this weekend. So I figured that it's a perfectly good time for Jay and I to kick back and lay it to you all old school-like.
Raj.
Nice.
Super Raj. So, what happened this weekend, other than the Super Bowl?
Well, Thursday, I had the honor and privilege to play in a Fate Reforged preview draft.
Right.
So,
how sick was that?
It was super sick. I got to play against such notable players. So, first, I played against Lee Sharp. So he's from Wizards. I met him at the Community Cup. He's an amazing human being. And he actually is now in charge of things like redemption compensation events and that sort of stuff.
Okay.
So that's pretty sweet. And so I played against him round one. So it was kind of like the first time drafting the format. Like, I never actually drafted the format. And here's my deck too. I'm going to open this for you so you can take a look at it. It's fucking sick. So it was, of course, it is archived on my Twitch page, so you can check that out. But what we basically did was we got to draft one Fate Reforged and two KTK. I was playing in the queues with Kenji and Paul Cheon, Graham from Loading Ready Run, and a whole bunch of other like insane players. Like, Adam Prozac took over for Lee after round one. There was just, like, so many insane players. And so I drafted this sweet blue-white deck that splashes black. My first pack I open, I get Dragon Scale General. So that is the Fate Reforged rare. It's a 2/3 for 4 mana. The beginning of your end step, bolster X, where X is the number of tapped creatures you control.
Right.
I found that, like, with Fate Reforged, basically, like, all the rares are insane. So you kind of have to just, like, take the rare first pack and then go with, and then just, like, stay open if you need to, right?
Right.
But you always take the rare because the rare is just insane.
Yeah, okay.
So I open that up first, and then I get past this awe-inspiring, amazing card.
Silumgar,
a foil Silumgar the Drifting Death, which is what I get past, okay? So, like, the foil rare in the pack tells me that there is some insane bomb rare, because Silumgar is functionally...
He's, like, unbeatable.
He functionally is unbeatable, right?
He's, like, an unbeatable super bomb. How do you pass that card?
So, I was like, so what do you take instead of that? Like, Ugin? Right?
Yeah,
I guess. Kenji passed to me, and I'm like, oh, God. Like, what did you even take if you're giving me this, right? I was like, snap that up.
Yeah.
And so I just... Then I got past... what was the next one I got? I think I got... I'm trying to look. I got an Enhanced Awareness, and I got a Dragon Bell Monk, and I started to get, like, Jeskai Sage, you know, and I started to kind of get the makings of this blue-white tempo deck. You know, we kind of drafted a couple black cards to try, like, Hooded Assassin came around.
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff. Harsh Sustenance, you know, I took. Maybe I was going to be black-white. And then once we got into the KTK packs, because I thought it was just like black, white, splash to blue, KTK packs started to come around, and I started to get some insane bombs, right? Like when I say bombs, I mean as far, like, great quality cards. I got 2 copies of Jeskai Wind Scout. I got, you know, Crippling Chill, Monastery Flock. You know, I got 2 Glacial Stalkers. My rare in my first pack was High Sentinels of Arashin, which is a 3/4 for 4.
Also,
like,
good.
Super bomb, right? And so, like, the deck really just kind of came around, and it ended up being the sweet blue-white skies deck, and I had, you know, like, a lot of really good tempo removal, like double kill shot, crippling chill, and it was really, really a sweet ride. So I was able to take that to 2-1. I lost to Lee by drawing, like, 2 lands in game 3 to his 7, and I just got ranch, so, like, that happens, right? And then round 2, I faced off against Graham from Loading Ready Run and Friday Night Magics and that sort of stuff. So took him down in 2. And then the last round, I got to face off against Kenji. Numot the Nummy, Mr. Limited himself. And I take him to Browntown game 1. Game 2, he shows me the sheer power of Palace Siege.
Yep.
The Black Siege is
like
unbeatable. It was so good. Because it's like as soon as you think you've stabilized, and then all of a sudden it's just like, nope, I'm gaining every turn.
Yep. Or just getting back like a merciless executioner every turn.
Yeah. So anyway, so that I lost game 2, and then game 3, I guess he got choked up on mana. And
is that what he took over Silumgar?
Yeah.
It can't be, right?
It is.
What the fuck?
I know.
I can't be right. I can't be that.
It's
bad.
What he just took. He wanted to try it out. I mean, the drafts don't matter, right? Really, I guess.
I guess.
I mean, apparently, I dropped his limited rating to less than 1900. But
suck on that.
Suck on that, Kenji.
That's what you get for experimenting.
Passing Silumgar, like,
yeah.
super ultra mega bomb. But yeah, so the deck was sweet. I played it fairly well. Played it fairly tight. I didn't mess up too badly. I think I played pretty tight. I drafted really well. And it was a really good time. So Lily was playing with me during this one, so she was really happy to see all the blue cards and watch the dragon just go to work. So
yeah.
So it was a pretty sweet deck. So that was a really good time. And then on Friday night I drafted again.
Oh really?
I did. This time I had Curly drafting with me.
Oh.
And for those of you that don't know, Curly is well known for his second place at some GP somewhere in Boston.
I think it's Mini.
Yeah, Minneapolis or something. Yeah, the modern one in Minneapolis last year. And so I open pack 1 Silumgar.
Oh, okay.
So I snap that off because that card's unbeatable. My next pick out of the pack is Lotus Path Djinn. Lotus Path Djinn is one of those cards in the set that out of Fate Reforged is sort of like one of the best commons you can get in blue just about. Because it's like a 2/3 flyer for 4 mana with prowess.
Right.
But it's only 1 blue mana. So completely splashable. The card's really good and kind of holds out against a lot of the removal. And the fact that it just flies and gets enormous is super good. So I got one of those, and then after, and then I got a Whisk Away in the third pack, or third
pack. And how good is Whisk Away?
Like, absurdly good.
Right?
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah. It's, like, really, really good. You know, and just straight time walking your opponent, or, yeah, you know, save your guy if you need to, instant speed, no questions asked, super good. And then after that, I got a second Lotus Path Djinn. So it just, the whole thing just goes off the rails at that point. I end up getting, like, an Ethereal Ambush, which is sweet, and I get a Jeskai Sage, and a Typhoid Rats, and the Sulte Emissary. Like, this
Sulte Emissary is so good.
I'm really, really impressed with him overall. He has been, like, a cute little all-star, great little speed buff.
Yeah.
Yeah, great little card. And, I mean, I got reasonable removal. I got some instants. I got, you know, Crippling Chill later, Swarm of Bloodflies, Death Frenzy, Murderous Cut. Like, I got past a Murderous Cut.
What sort of Blood Frenzy?
Swarm of Bloodflies is black 4 for a flying 0/0. It's an insect. Comes into play with 2/1/1 counters on it. Whenever another creature dies, you put a 1/1 counter on it. So what you have to understand about Swarm of Bloodflies is that it's really good when you have Silumgar the Drifting Death on the table.
Yep.
Because he just kills guys all day, and then your swarm gets enormous, and you kill your opponent. So it was sweet. Like, the deck was really good. We ended up 3-0-ing the draft.
Nice.
Pretty easily. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like the limited format is a lot more fun. You're getting a lot more power out of your first couple packs. And because the colors, like, the power slant is a little bit different than it was in KTK, it kind of leads people down different paths. So if you are aware of what you're looking for and you can make the appropriate color cuts early, then you can really get paid off in the second two packs.
Right.
So, like, in, like, both the drafts that I did, I cut blue fairly hard about halfway through pack one. I mean, in the case of Friday night's draft, it was, like, right away. But, you know, like, if you're cutting blue fairly early, you can get some of these ridiculous cards that just make some of the, you know, decent cards that are blue completely absurd. So, I really like blue, I really like black, and I really like white. So, if you're kind of, the green can be a splash, the white can be a splash. White is arguably one of the more powerful colors, I think, in the limited format, but it's often fought over because, like, the Mardu guys and the Abzan guys are both fighting over a lot of the good white cards.
Right.
So I'm pretty happy kind of settling into a Jeskai-esque, you know, Bug or Esper, like that sort of flavor where it's like a tempo-y, control-ish aggro deck. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's right in my wheelhouse as far as limited goes in general, and it's a very, very good deck when you can get it in this format. So
seems sweet.
Yeah. So I'm pretty
happy. I mean, the fact that removal still is at, like, a very high cost, means, like, I think probably makes things like Prowess better with in that regard, you know? You don't get blown out. Like, you're putting a lot of eggs in a basket here when you build a deck around playing spells so that your guys get bigger. But if you're if removal is so expensive and not very good, and, like, you know, it can kind of makes that ability better, makes it it can kind of be paid off. I think a lot of people might stay away from stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just because of the old fear of dies to Doomblade without realizing that, like, it's been, like, 4 years since we had Doomblade kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Me and Tyler Bloom actually had a really good conversation about that on the stream when we streamed our the pre-release for this set.
Yeah.
Because we noticed, all the 4-0 decks, the 5-0 decks, all the 3-0 decks, they were all playing, almost all of them were playing this, like, except for the Jeskai decks, I think, they were all playing this, like, build-your-own-dragon, deck, where they would play, like, Molten Snakeskin, and they would play the black guy that Soulflare, is that his name?
Yeah,
Soulflare.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they would play things like that. And then, like, of course, maybe they had some dragons. I mean, there are uncommon ones and rare ones that are in the seeded packs. And then they would play, like, some of the rune marks that are, you know, classically terrible. But, like, we were talking about it where Tyler used to get kind of ragged on all the time for suggesting that in Limited you play some of these cards. But as time is progressing, these cards are just, like, yeah, they're not great, but they're becoming better and better every set that they come out because, like, what's the best removal in this, like, in this set? Like, is it, like, the Flame Slash? Like, the Shock, maybe? Right? The Shock that is sometimes Flame Slash?
So that one's good, but I think, like, you're looking at cards like Bathe in Dragonfire is supremely good right now.
Yeah.
Pyrotechnics is just kind of, like, the bomb right now.
Yeah.
It gets the cone of flame of this set, I think.
Yeah, and there's like arc lightning, I guess, too.
Yeah.
And...
yeah, it's like there's a
lot of red burn.
There's a lot of red burn. The black spells that kill stuff dead, like that unconditionally, like are, you know, five. Murderous Cut if you're getting it on discount.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's like five, six.
Yeah,
you know?
And so things like Molten Snakeskin, like we saw a lot of turns where like if the guy on the play could get his Molten Snakeskin down on four, then the opponent had to have the removal on the land on his turn five, which effectively also means that he has to time walk. He's not playing threats, and if he doesn't have that, then we saw every single time the game end.
Wow.
Because they couldn't kill the dragon. Like, you don't have two removal spells in one turn, generally.
Yeah.
And even if you do, you don't have fucking 10 mana for that shit.
Totally.
And as soon as you throw one of those on there, you know, like, a lot of times you'd see a guy go turn two or turn three something, and the guy with the burn would play another threat to kind of answer it. Because it's only turn two or turn three, turn four in that area where you're trying to build your base.
Yep.
And then what would happen is the guy would untap, and instead of playing another threat, he would just play a rune mark or something, or a like a molten snakeskin, or and then all of a sudden you tapped out to play your 2/3 guy, and now his guy, you can't kill it with your red burn because your red burn's too small now.
Yeah.
We also saw a lot of times where like you're waiting for them to play a threat. And then they manifest something and give it hexproof and flying with that cloud form card or whatever it was.
Yeah.
One is like flying vigilance, and one is like the white one, and the blue one's flying hexproof, I think. I think it's odd they both give flying, but they do, I think. But anyway, but like, so that happened a lot where like people are looking at this card, 3 mana to get a 2/2 that's flying hexproof. Like, that doesn't seem very good. It seems fine. But, like, what if you're burning away, like, a spell that you really want or blah-de-blah, right? But, like, the thing with Manifest, some like, that we found is Manifest was way better than we gave it credit for. So, yeah, it was Cloud Form, sorry. So, when Cloud, it's a 3-mana enchantment, it's 1 blue-blue. When it comes into play, you Manifest, so you morph the top card of your library, basically. And it gives Flying Hexproof. And then the white one also gives Flying, which I think is
weird.
Yeah,
Flying and Lifelink.
But, it's Lifelink.
Yeah.
So, and there's a cycle of these, but yeah, so like, but you'd see that happen. You'd see like the guy manifest with hexproof, and then he would just go like rune mark and have like a 5/5 first strike flying hexproof dragon. Like, what do you do to that? You don't do anything. You lose the game. And these are traditionally like 23rd cards in your deck. These are traditionally 28th cards.
Talking about like the
like
the
auras.
Marks.
Yeah, the marks, the auras, the snake skins, even the cloud forms.
I think the cloud forms and light forms, like those two in particular, those are going like super high.
Yeah, they are now. When we were at the pre-release, we were just, a lot of people just weren't impressed with them because they were like, well, okay, I spend a turn, sorcery speed, to get a 2/2 flyer with lifelink, and then you kill it. Like, and it turned out to be the land I needed, or it turned out to be a Silumgar that I couldn't unmorph, or it turned out to be a fucking siege. Do you know what I mean? Because you don't have library manipulation. And with the hexproof one, we found, like, because people weren't playing auras, then they're like, well, I'm just getting a 2/2 for 3 with hexproof and flying. That's fine, but as soon as you block it, you've now killed either a garbage card that I didn't need, which is fine, but sometimes you've killed a really good card that I needed, and I'd rather just not play that. But like I said, we found, like, especially the one with hexproof, we found that because removal is quote-unquote bad now, in comparison to previous sets, and so for people that are, like, I guess kind of newer to Magic, what we mean by that is, like, in Limited, Doomblade used to be a common, and Doomblade is 1 colorless and a black mana to destroy target non-black creature. So, and that's a common, and that was in core set when you played 3 of the same set. So, like, I've seen drafts where people had 5 of those in their draft deck.
Yeah.
So you weren't afraid of creatures at all. You didn't have to play anything but Doomblade, lands, and then, like, a Silumgar type card, like one finisher, because your opponent had no creatures. You killed them all. It didn't matter what he had. And now that Doomblade card now costs 5.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's interesting because you've got cards like Killshot. Right,
yeah,
which is sweet. Like, it's a nice card in limited format. It's a good, reasonable version of Doomblade.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Yeah,
right. But otherwise, yeah, you've got like crazy volumes of bounce.
Yeah, bounce.
And there's a lot of bounce in blue. Has a ton of it.
Yeah. The problem with a lot of the bounce is, if you're actually bouncing threatening creatures to try to buy time, it can be very difficult to come back if you don't have the right cards to kind of like finish up with them. So like what we saw sometimes happen is like things like Reality Shift generally is better than Rapid Hybridization.
Yeah.
Where you destroy their creature but they get a 3/3, so it's generally better than that. But there was times where you would just blow yourself out by giving them some crazy bomb and exiling something that you had to exile or you were dead just because of they were creating like an aggressive start against you, and
sure.
You know, you basically had to use it to time walk kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting. And like I said, like bounce really does hose the build your own dragon strategy. And I don't even know if that's good. That's just something that we noticed at the pre-releases is like people were really underestimating cards that, like I said, normally you wouldn't even consider playing these cards.
Yeah.
Like you would never give half a second even of a thought to playing Molten Snakeskin.
No, I agree.
You know what I mean? And now, like I said, we saw that card like almost every feature match. And every feature match that it didn't get immediately, the guy didn't get immediately killed when the guy tapped out, or sometimes the guy would just wait until like turn 5 and play it with the mana up.
Yeah.
It just won him the game. All he did is sit on Molten Snakeskin the entire game.
Wow.
And just win with like a single, like you said, like blood flies, or
yeah.
Win with a Hooting Mandrills that you've given flying to now, right? Like somehow with some like with some shitty aura.
Sure.
You know, and now you just have a fucking 6/6 dragon that you paid 3 mana for because you delved with Hooting Mandrills.
Yikes.
You know what I mean? And stuff like that, like, just came out of nowhere. It was really cool to see that, because traditionally, like, that stuff's just garbage, and, you know, it just ends up kind of rotting somewhere, but... So it's cool to actually see that actually get played.
Now. Yeah. Yeah. And truthfully, it's weird. It's funny you should say that exactly, because one of the cards that, on Friday night that my opponent had a Mardu deck, and they were, or like a red-black base deck or whatever, and they were putting Snakeskin on, like, a 3/3, and... Yep. You know, it's like, wow, that thing's real big, you know?
Yeah, like, now they have a whole board against you because it's Mardu, and then one of their guys now is a 5/5 regenerator. They don't need any more threats.
Yeah. Thankfully, I mean, it doesn't improve the toughness, which is, like, the only saving grace in Ties of the Mana, but...
yeah.
The interesting thing, Manifest as a deck or as a strategy is really interesting, because there are decks that you can play that Manifest is just, like, the way to go, right? And most of the time, I feel like those decks are going to be really good with blue cards. And, like, Waterworld is a card that I've been blown out with. Like, Waterworld is the bane of an Abzan player, right? Because an Abzan player, they build up all their Outlast on a couple of guys. They're getting in with these huge guys. Yeah. You just Waterworld, like, boom, boom, put them both in your hands, and you have two idiots again, right?
Yeah.
But what's really cute about it, and there's, like, do you remember Aether Tradewinds from Worldwake? It's like blue 2, and you bounce something of you that you control and something that your opponent controls.
Yeah, like similar to Peel.
Yeah, so there's a Delve version of that in Fate Reforged. Okay, so the card functionally does exactly the same thing. You bounce 2 permanents, one you control and one you don't. But what's sweet about that card with Manifest, like specifically in the Manifest decks, is if you Manifest off like a dumb spell, like a good one.
Yeah.
Then you can like bounce their guy, return your spell card to your hand, and then cast it and blow your opponent out.
Yeah.
So
like we were thinking about that before, where we were like, what happens when you like manifest like a counter spell, and then you would just deal incidental damage to them, say between 2 and 6 points of damage to them with this thing, and then they go to play like their Silumgar or their Atarka or some shit, or their fucking dashed out red guy that copies bros.
Yeah.
And you just fucking bounce their guy and your guy, and then counter their fucking like Ugin or something.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, bleh.
Totally dummy. So
yes.
So I think that those types of interactions are really sweet, and I think they add a lot to the mechanic of Manifest.
Yeah.
But like that said, Manifest versus Morph, I think that like I am killing the Morphs 10 times out of 10 before I even touch a Manifest.
I think you have to, yeah. Yeah, I think you have to. I think that's the thing. It's just like Manifest is like a what-if scenario, and a Morph's always a Morph, right?
Yeah.
And so far there hasn't really been any bad Morphs. Like Morphs that don't do anything. I mean, there hasn't been any super powerful Morphs either. in terms of, like, Wildender.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, there hasn't been any tricksy Morphe bastards.
Well, the Karu Spelljack guy, the Spelljack guy.
Yeah,
cute,
that's
but,
true,
like,
yeah, but
he's really
isn't her morph, like, isn't her morph, four. Like, six or something?
It's four, isn't it?
I thought it was way more expensive than that. I could be wrong.
I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, her morph is six.
Sorry. Yeah, so it's like, I don't know, like, that's, and it's, like, that ability is crazy. I mean, at six, generally, you're going to be countering something that, yeah, you're going to want to play for free later, like a big fucking bomb.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, they just don't, like, they can just not play a big fucking bomb.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? Yeah. Like, or you just play this 3/3 for four mana.
Yeah, and then you're just like, well, I guess I have to counter that or die. So,
yeah.
But yeah, and like, I mean, like I said, there was fine morphs. There's just nothing crazy like when morph first came out, like Wildender and fucking, I didn't really play a whole lot back then, but like Bane of the Living, where you could unmorph and Wrath and
yeah.
things like that, right? Like that stuff is like, I can't imagine playing limited with that.
Yeah.
That would be crazy.
Yeah.
And that's effectively what Manifest could be, but at the same time, Manifest could be a fucking forest.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah.
So I think, yeah, you want to be blocking and killing the morph almost every time. If you get blown out by a manifest, that was lucky, basically.
Right? Yeah,
unless they manipulated their fucking library, if they pondered or something.
Sure. Yeah, and then that's something else, right?
Yeah.
But I think that in general, like, I think the odds are about less than 50% that it's actually a creature.
Yeah, probably.
Like in limited, it's probably closer to 40.
Probably.
So.
And then, like, so that's interesting. So we can talk about that kind of in standard, too, or in constructed. So I don't think it's, first off the top of my head, I don't think it's good enough for any format other than standard. It's the only format I could see it actually.
So there is an FNM deck, I guarantee you, that plays Trail of Mystery, Secret Plans, and a bunch of these idiots.
For sure.
Okay, and it probably will be okay at some
yeah.
point, and
yeah.
whatever. But I mean, as far as a competitive, like, take it to SSG and see.
Yeah. I think as far as competitive, it's probably going to fall to the wayside like a lot of other mechanics where there might be one or two cards that are competitive enough to, or are good enough to be competitive.
Sure.
So, like, if you think of Dash, for example,
yeah.
I could see, like, Mardu Scout being played, not so much because he has Dash, but because he's a 3/1 for 2 in mono red that also happens to have Dash. Or I could see the red guy that dashes out and copies an attacker. He's really good with stuff that comes into play, right? Come into play, fucking, like, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but, like, imagine when he was with, what's it called? The Goblin Rabble Master, actually. Somebody was talking to me about that with, actually, and somebody at my fucking store. Like, I've talked about them playing red-white with Purphoros before, and he just kind of, like, it's not his own deck, but he kind of got the idea and then has made it, like, he's not playing a list, but then we were looking online, and, like, now that's, like, a real thing. Red-white with, like, Dash creatures is so fucking crazy.
Dude.
If you have Purphoros, because you're lava axing for 2 mana every turn.
Yeah, red-white devotion, like, red devotion
yeah.
strategies, like, the Mardu Scout was, and the Flamewake Phoenix, those two cards together.
Yeah.
Make this a viable archetype. Right?
And then you have things like Goblin Rabble Master. So if you have the guy that dashes out and copies an attacker, now you have two Goblin Rabble Masters
yeah.
that both created you goblins. So now they're both a minimum of 4/4 or 5/5. And it's like, well, do I block the dasher? Do I block the Rabble Master so he can't dash anything? How do I deal with that? And I mean, yeah, it's 4 mana, so I'm like I said, maybe it's not good enough. But I think Manifest falls kind of into that zone where, like, the only card off the top of my head that I can think of that is good enough is the Whisperwood Elemental.
Agreed.
So he's like the 4/4 for 5 in green, the
yep.
3 green. And then at the beginning of every end step of every, or of your turn, maybe only. Is it your turn?
Yeah, your turn.
You get a free 2/2 off the top of your deck, which is great. And then you can also sacrifice him so that until end of turn, anytime a face-up non-token creature, so any of your regular dudes, dies, you get they manifest as well. So if somebody tries to Wrath you, the blue-black control deck tries to Crux of Fate you, and you just sack this guy, and then, you know, you lose 3 guys, but you get 3 2/2s, and generally for them, they've probably paid 5 mana on their 5th turn to Wrath you, so basically you untap with 6 power on the board still, right?
Yeah.
That's the only card that I can think of with Manifest that could even potentially be good enough.
Now, I think that there's a dirtily blue-eyed control deck that wants to play that ridiculous enchantment that shall not be named. And it could just be the one that just, like, craps out the 2-2 manifest for 4 mana.
Yeah.
And I think that could be something, but again, that's something to, you know, we'll wait and see. But yeah, like, Mardu Scout for sure is seeing play in Red-White Devotion lists. Jerry posted a list today, today being Monday, of Man with Plane 251, first place Magic Online daily event, 4 copies Mardu Scout, 4 copies Flamewake Phoenix, 4 copies Rabble Master, 4 copies Eidolon of the Great Rebel.
Which is, like, basically Rabble Master, right? Yeah. Like, it's power toughness equal to creatures and enchantments you have or something?
No. Eidolon of the Great Rebel is the one where when you cast a spell, converted mana cost 3 or less, it deals 2 damage to that player.
But it has
2 pips in it, right, which is super relevant.
Yeah.
And you got, like, 3 Purphoros there as well, and you get to play cards like Hammer Purphoros, Hordling Outburst, Chain to the Rocks, like, because it's a red-white deck, it's ridiculous. And Nykthos to just do dumb stuff. Anyways, Red-White Devotion is going, like, Red Devotion is going to be a really, really crazy card, or crazy deck, so it'll see, you really want to kind of keep an eye on that in the next little bit. Really sweet sideboard options.
Especially if you're going to be like everybody at my FNM who now is playing fucking Control.
Ugh.
Oh my god, I had the fucking worst time ever at FNM on Friday. So, me and Jeremy both, actually.
So are you guys still on Abzan Aggro?
Yeah.
Okay, so Abzan Aggro, have you changed the list?
Ours plays more like mid-range. And the reason we say that is because, like, yeah, we have 12 2-drops, and we'll just fucking kill you if you give us the chance. But at the same time, because we know kind of how our deck is set up, we also trade our 2-drops super aggressively. So that we can then just Rhino you, and you don't have anything, right?
Yep.
But, like, so our deck was, like, we took out the Wardens, because you guys were right. Like, basically, anytime you're investing mana into a Warden, it just is dying. Like, its removal is too good right now in Standard. It's too easy to kill it multiple times. Like, it had level 2 made it a 4-4, so Bioblight couldn't kill it. That would be huge.
Agree.
But, you know, whatever. So, it has, like, 4 Fleeceman Lions, 4 Rakasha Death Dealers, 4 Siege Geranos, 3 Anafenzas, 4 Heir of the Wilds.
Wingmate Rock?
Well, Jeremy played 2 Wingmate Rocks. I fucking hate Wingmate Rock, so I do not play that card.
Okay.
Then we played... I can just grab the deck, actually. So I sound like a fucking idiot if I try to remember. So it's right here. So yeah, so we got the Death Dealers. Oh yeah, and then 4 Valorous... Well, okay, so this is the other thing. We played 2 Valorous Stance, 2 Bioblight in the main.
Okay.
Because we didn't know how much, like, Rabble Master you're gonna see and shit like that, right? I think that the proper number of Valorous Stance to play is 4.
Agree.
It was always either white Counterspell or white Doomblade.
Correct.
Literally every fucking time.
Absolutely correct.
There's nothing wrong with that card.
No.
And actually now, I would play 0 Bioblades in the main because we only played Control all fucking day.
Wow.
Even Abzan was Control. It was so fucking garbage.
Are you categorizing the new, like, Sultai ramp decks as Control?
No, we didn't see any of those. We saw blue-black Control. Mm-hmm. Maybe we saw one Sultai ramp deck with, like, all the... Yeah, with like, all the dig-through times. Yeah.
So it's Gerard Fabiano's list.
Yes.
He played, like, 2 weeks ago, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, Rushot's Secret, Crux of Fate, like, that sort of stuff? Oh, it's totally a Control deck. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a Del Control deck, but it's a Control deck. Yeah.
And then we had, like, I think 1 or 2 Murderous Cuts, 3 Abzan Charms. We put Courser back in, which we immediately thought was wrong, because every single time we sideboarded out Courser, because it was just, like, it just does nothing. It just didn't do anything. I didn't want to put it in, but Jeremy showed me some lists and stuff, and we didn't know what we'd see. And so, we didn't really have any other cards to put in, right?
Sure.
Heroes Downfalls. I tried an Erebos. And I fucking loved it. I actually want to play 2 Erebos.
Really?
The fact that my Control opponents couldn't gain life, I lost to this fucking Sultai Control deck.
Feed the Pack.
When he was at 3 life, twice.
He played Feed the Pack on you.
And he also fucking stole my Courser of Crucifix and then played a fucking land with Ashiok.
Yeah.
And went to 4. And then I'm like, oh, even if I draw a rhino, I now have to draw two fucking rhinos?
Yeah.
Great. Because they have Kiora to fog you all day, and they have fucking all the removal to right? And then, like it was just brutal. So Erebos making it so that they can't, making it so that they can't gain life was super good. It wasn't like it came into play a whole lot, but in the mirror against Abzan, where they can't gain life off their rhinos, so they're making me lose three, but they're not going up three, but I'm draining them. That was super relevant. And then also, fucking Eugene, when they play Big Daddy Ugin, and they exile all the permanents I have, and Abzan has no fucking way to redraw cards except for maybe Abzan Charm, and maybe if you're old school playing Read the Bones, there was turns where I would draw four cards with Erebos, like in response to the Ugin ability, and so all my shit got removed, but I got to draw four cards and then draw my card for my turn. Now, all of the times that happened, I drew all land. So that happened twice, and both times I drew 10 land.
Wow.
So that fucking super sucked.
Sure.
But
the act of drawing that many cards was super
gross.
That
was fucking insane. It was fucking crazy. Like, had I, instead of drawing a bunch of lands, drawn even two threats, he was dead. If I drew two rhinos, for sure he was dead.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, so like that makes it, I think that makes a huge difference. And like I said, I don't know how good it is. I've played literally one game, like one tournament, one FNM with it. And I want two of them. I only played one and I want fucking two of them.
Wow.
And then I played one Whip of Erebos. I never got to see it.
Okay.
Oh, that was the other thing. It fucking shuts off your opponent's Whip. And Whip is such a good fucking card right now. If Whip said, four mana enchantment, your creatures gain lifelink, it would be good enough in standard right now. Because it's so grindy, and then all somebody does is they go, Whip of Erebos, do you have the counter or do you have the naturalize or whatever? If you don't, I'm gonna gain 15 life. It doesn't matter what you do. You could Crux of Fate me that turn, or it doesn't matter, whatever. The reanimation part of Whip is a fucking bonus.
Wow.
I've never lost to the reanimation part of Whip, except for once when the guy was playing really old school Sultai, like Sidisi Whip.
Yeah.
When it first came out.
Sure.
And I lost to just reoccurring Hornet Queen that I didn't realize was even a real deck, so I had no sideboard. But other than that, I always just lose to them just going Whip, attack you for 10.
Dude.
Like, they don't have to worry about keeping blockers back anymore. They don't have to fucking use removal to kill my guys. They don't even care about my guys anymore. They just attack me, gain 10. They go from 8 to 18, and I was at 12 thinking I'm doing great. They're dead in a couple turns. And then I actually just fucking lost. I can't come back. I can't come back from a 12-point fucking life gain. How do you go? You know what I mean? So I want two of them. I don't know how, like, Siege Rhino Whip isn't the best combo in standard right now.
Well, I mean, it was for a while. I mean, Jerry's... So Jerry's Abzan Reanimator list, the last one that he posted, I think is probably the best Abzan Whip deck I've ever seen in my life, because he took some lessons from the deck that I've been playing in standard, which is the four-color soul list.
Yeah.
It took second place at... a new revision to it took second place at the Premier IQ. Sure. Just this past weekend in DC, I think.
Yeah.
And like Brad Nelson recently, you know, put up a video where he's, you know, tried to put Whisperwood Elemental in it instead of Wingmate Rock and that sort of thing. But
yeah,
like
I would, like me personally, I would play that. I almost in Abzan, I almost like just because I was looking for like new fresh cards to kind of, I almost played the single copy of Whisperwood Elemental that I had. Like Jeremy played, I think, a single copy of Tassigar.
Dude, Tassigar the Golden Fang is an absurd magic card. That is, like, he is not remotely close to fair.
Yeah, like, I guess we just don't know how to use him properly.
Sure.
The other thing is, like I said, like, Jeremy was playing, like, a single copy of it, so...
Yeah, how often do you see it, right?
Like, how often do you see it, and how often do you get to actually use it to do something creative,
right?
Yeah, but, it's just... It's difficult to see how good he is if you're not playing a deck that's built around abusing him.
The graveyard,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, like, it's hard to just put him into Abzan and, like, as a value card.
Agreed.
And then see him actually do stuff, because, like, when do I ever want to play him? I'd rather just, like, play a Rhino and then delve for Murderous Cut to clear the way for my Rhino, and then, You know, I mean, like, and looking at Abzan, it's very true what Paul told me, you know, when he was on the show. Chion was telling me, like, what deck do you want to play in Standard? And I said the best deck, and he said, well, you can play Jund. That's what Abzan is. Just play the... It's just a bunch of really good cards in three colors, and you just play the most expensive one every turn.
Yeah.
And so Tasigur fits really well into a theme like that, because the fact that he says you get back a non-land card is really relevant.
And, like, all of your cards are insane.
All your cards are insane. And that's the other thing that me and Jeremy were talking about, is, like, with all of our two-drops, and, like, traditionally, yeah, you'd look at a deck with 12 two-drops, and then some three-drops and four-drops, and that's, like, the top of the curve. You'd look at that as an aggressive deck that wants to kill you really quickly. But like I said, we aggressively trade our two drops as Doomblade.
Yeah.
Because what we'll do is play threats, kill your guys. We know you're going to have removal because right now everybody has removal. And then we have some threats left over. You don't. You're taking incremental damage here and there. And then eventually we're just going to Rhino you.
Yeah.
And so playing... like Fleece Main Lines, Death Dealers, and Heir of the Wilds, just as 12 copies of Doomblade to fuel your murderous cuts on top of Bile Blights, on top of Heroes Downfalls. You're basically, it's like you're playing a control deck. But it's more like you're playing tempo control, because you're saying to them, like, I'm fine with you killing this guy. Yeah. I don't care. I don't care if you kill this guy at all. And they're thinking, holy fuck, this guy keeps playing threats and two drops and attacking me. And, you know, I'm playing control. I just played a tap land into a tap land into a tap land to scry. And he just played a fucking two drop into a fucking Anafenza. And if he untaps and plays a Rhino, how do I win? Yeah. And we're thinking, like, I don't even have the fucking Rhino in my hand. I don't have any way to find the Rhino. I don't have the Rhino. I'm just fucking around and want you to waste your removal so that... Because inevitability is what we go on, right? Rhinos, whipping back a Rhino, you know, getting down low and being in a race with you, and then playing, like, slamming a whip and just attacking with all of our guys, you know. And I think we really like whip over Sorin, because, like, even though you're playing them effectively for the same reason, I feel like I have to protect Sorin. I don't want to time walk myself. Like, I don't want to play a 4-mana sorcery that just says your creatures get lifelink, right?
Yep.
I want recurrable lifelink. So what ends up happening is with Sorin, it's like I feel like I almost have to leave blockers back, or I'm pumping my blockers. I'm not getting lifelink. I'm giving my blockers lifelink is almost how that ability almost reads.
Yeah. Yep.
And so with Whip, it's like super, like it's more narrow to get rid of. It's more difficult to get rid of. And then also on top of that, you know, it has the added benefit of it, like, just late game bringing back a Rhino. Like, I don't even care if you fucking kill it, because I just drained you again, right?
Yeah.
And if you kill it, I'm bringing it back next turn to drain you again. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. No, I think that, you know, it's interesting to see that the Abzan aggro decks are kind of... I mean, there's obviously not a lot of blue-red heroic in the store.
No, there's like one or two that you see, and I feel like that's the closest deck to a coin flip. Okay. Mostly just because, like, if they draw really well, then you can't beat them.
Correct.
Because they play a threat on turn one or two, and then they just back it up with God's Willing all day. And like just shit like that, right? Your Bile Blights can't kill it because they pump it. Your Murderous Cuts and Heroes Downfalls can't kill it because they God's Willing it.
Yep.
So, but if they don't have really good draws, because their deck kind of works on making one threat really good, if you can somehow get rid of that, or get rid of a couple of those threats with like a Crux of Fate, an End Hostilities, a Drown in Sorrow, then like... I find, again, inevitability wins out. You just play your 2/2s as basically blockers and make them use their God's Willing, like, aggressively to get damage in on you, and then you end up rhinoing them.
Nice.
But, like I said, it is a hard matchup, and it's the closest matchup to a coin flip book where there's lots of times where I've played heroic, mono white and blue white, and just been like, this is the best hand I can hope for against you, and I've lost. Mm-hmm. I already know I've lost. So it'd be interesting. There's a deck that a friend of mine was playing. It was sort of Abzan control. He played it with one copy of Palace Siege, the Black Siege.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that that was very interesting because he didn't have a whole lot of creatures in his deck. It was like a really controlled deck. Like, he played lots of Wraths and Planeswalkers.
Yep.
But he said, like, just draining for two every turn is, like, made a big difference. And then if he was in control and got it late, just playing the other mode so that he could get back, like, Rhinos.
Rhinos
like,
all the time, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that was super crazy. He plays, like I said, the Executioner. The
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, even playing that guy and just having him come back every turn so you have... Because there's no... I don't really think there's any other sac removal in this.
No. No, there really isn't.
Right? Like, we used to have, like, Geth's Verdict and shit like that, but we don't have that anymore. So, it's like he said, it's really powerful for him, and then there's things that he could do where he plays the Rhino and then plays the Merciless Executioner after attacking with the Rhino and sacks the Rhino so that he has a 3-1 and you either are taking 3 every turn or you're blocking it and then he's just getting the Rhino back with his Siege anyway.
Wow.
So he's not taking any damage from you. It doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
Right? So
that's a really good use for the Siege. I didn't think about it. Like,
yeah, he said we watched
Xion do that in Limited, actually. He just, this weekend, it was crazy.
Yeah, he said it worked really well. It was really cool. And, I mean, he's tweaking it. It was, like, his own kind of thing. I don't know how much Abzan control you see online or anything, because I don't follow that stuff
a whole lot. Yeah, not using that combo. That's sick.
But, yeah, he said it was really fun. It was really sweet. I'm even interested in things like the White Siege. I don't know how good that would be in a constructed environment. But giving your creatures 2/1/1 counters every turn, that seems retarded. Like, and with things like Rhino... being a trampler, that's super relevant.
Yeah.
With flyers, like rock, that's super relevant.
Yeah. I mean, you can just use it to tap down their best creature every turn, too, if that's too much.
That,
to
too.
It, right?
That, so, too, right?
I mean, they play, that's one of the best ones, I think, that plays well together. Like, you play multiple sieges, and if you got one set on each one, like, your opponent's never winning combat.
They're not having a good time, for sure. And it only costs 4, right? Like, the blue one is 3, and the blue one's interesting. I'd like to see somebody break it. The blue one either lets you loot at the beginning of your draw phase, or it makes it so that you can't be targeted by stuff unless they pay an extra.
You or your permanents cannot be targeted by spells unless your opponent
pays. It's unfortunate that it's only spells.
I agree. Yeah, I think if it were spells and abilities, that card is like Modern play.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it probably started out as spells and abilities. It probably just got tested that it was too strong. Like, it became a 4 of in every deck kind of thing.
Yeah, it could be. It's, by the way, like, the drawing one extra card every turn is stupid busted and limited.
Yeah, that is stupid busted. That's better than Thassa.
Yep.
Like, I think that's better than Thassa.
Yeah, but I agree.
You know? And so, I'd like to see some of them kind of work their way into real Magic, into not just Limited. And like I said, like, The even the green one is really interesting. Getting 4 mana a turn is a really interesting... I don't know if it's broken, but it's an interesting card.
The green one saw, like, that was the breakout card with Ugin week 1 at Star City.
Right? Oh, where you...
Because
it's giving you...
Yeah, so let me just pull this up. So it was actually at in Washington. And it was broken a bunch of different ways. So Alian Trazi played the Sultai ramp deck, and it was very similar, just like a bunch of these rampy things. But, like, 3 Frontier Sieges, and you should have played 4, because you're just using it to ramp into Ugin.
Right?
So you, like, play Siege on 3 after playing a Caryatid on 2, right? And then you, like, play another Caryatid, you know, with the second mana for free, right? Like, there's so much stupidity that's on there. And there was also the Green-Black Constellation deck that was played by, like, Brian Bronduin, Brad Nelson, like, all those guys.
Uh-huh,
and they were playing 4 copies of it just to ramp into, like, Ugin or Hornet Queen.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Which is just silly. So, yeah, I mean, Frontier Siege, I think, was the one that got busted at first. Plus, the Frontier Siege is really gross when you combine it with specifically Hornet Queen. Not only are you ramping out early, but if you got on Dragons, like, you basically play Hornet Queen and you play 5 Doomblades.
Oh, because they fight.
Each one that comes into play will fight.
I never even thought of the other mode. Yeah.
So you just, like, wrath your opponent's board.
Yeah, every turn, yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty gross, right? Like I think the sieges are very good.
What's the red one do?
So the red one has 2 abilities.
It must be the worst one, because nobody talks about it.
Yeah, it's not bad. Like, it's starting to see some play in, like, the red-white mid-range deck. So the red-white mid-range deck, red-white aggro, like, Danny Goldstein played the deck, for example, at the Standard Open in Washington. And he actually played 2 copies of it. So it's 4 as well. And it says at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library until end of turn you can play the card. So it's like the Chandra Power Master effect.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then Dragons is whenever a creature you control leaves the battlefield, it deals one damage to target creature or player. So this is it's actually not bad if you consider it in like the red-white aggro or token strategy, and you're looking at things like Rabble Master, you know, Raise the Alarm, Hordling Outburst, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair, yeah. Like, Hordling Outburst after... I mean, it does cost 4. It'd be nice if it cost 3. But, yeah, like, I guess a Hordling Outburst is, like, Lightning Bolt, plus you're playing that card anyway.
Yeah, right? And, like, and that's the thing, right? So, like, if you're going to play Chandra... Most of these decks were playing Chandra Power Master anyway, and they were taking advantage of the Falter.
This is like Purphoros almost, too. Like, you're playing it in a deck where you would already play... Like, that Purphoros deck we already saw?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. You could play this kind of similarly... For, like, a similar function where... You know, you're getting incremental damage from things like Brimaz.
Yep.
And incremental damage from your Rabble Masters, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Nice.
So it's pretty sweet. They're all of them are pretty good. Like, I feel like they're all fairly pushed.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, Palace Siege may be Monastery Siege may be the only one that hasn't seen any play.
Which one's Monastery Siege?
It's the blue one.
The blue one. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's saw play in the sideboard of a 10th place list in the standard IQ on Sunday.
Right. Okay.
There you go. It and Outpost Siege, both of them saw play. But, like, this is the traditional Jeskai aggro list, right, that we saw sort of at the beginning of the season. 4 Mantis Rider, 4 Rabble Master, 4 Seeker, some Sharkins, and then just infinity burn spells.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah. It's like the Jeskai tokens list with Mantis Rider instead of... the Enchantment Ascendancy.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's standard is pretty sweet. There's lots of stuff going on. The Rise of Control is interesting.
Holy fuck! Everybody was playing it at my FNM, and like, not to be rude, I don't want to be rude to new players, but it was very frustrating. It's frustrating when you're the guy doing nothing, because they're either playing like blue black do nothing, but they. And they've killed all your shit, or because they're countering all your stuff. It's fine if they're interacting with you. I'm not one of those guys that's like, oh yeah, you countered all my stuff, you're playing 12 counters, I'm mad at you.
Yeah.
But definitely, if you don't know how to fucking play your deck, it's difficult because FNM is casual, and I want it to be casual, and I don't get mad at people, like I don't yell at them or anything, I get mad inside. But like, one thing that I really struggle with is how to tell people that they need to play faster.
Yeah.
Mostly because it's not because I'm a dick. It's not because like I'd be like, "Fuck you, guy! Come on, hurry up." It's I know how to be like, you know, "Hey, man, just FYI, like I don't want to get a draw. I know you don't want to get a draw, and I don't. I'm really, really not trying to be rude to you. I just want to make you aware of the time. We need to make a decision. Come on, we got to do something. Can you kill my guy? Kill my guy. Like we gotta, you know, something. I'm not like berating these people. The issue is just that they're out of practice, and where do you get practice? You get it at FNM.
Yeah.
But it's like, in round one, there was 4 draws.
Oh.
And then in round two, those 2 of those matches also almost went to draws, because both, like, 2 of the people were playing that fucking Sultai do-nothing every turn deck. And it was like, there was a turn where the guy, on his turn 3, he taps out to dig through time. That's pretty amazing that you're playing dig through time on turn 3.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that shouldn't take you 4 full minutes to make a decision. You're tapped out on your fucking turn looking at 7 cards that you get to keep 2 of.
Wow.
That should not be that should be a decision that you should be able to make.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing that frustrated me a lot, is like going to FNM, not knowing that everybody would be playing control, so you're already behind the gun because you're playing a fucking deck that is this Abzan deck is not good against control. It needs something to be better against control. It needs huge tweaks because we were starting behind already.
Wow.
And then to sit there and just be like, man, I have no cards in hand and I have no permanents on the board. I'm literally flipping the top card of my library over for my turn.
Wow.
So that the game progresses. You need to make decisions. You need to know how to play your deck. And you're playing a deck that you should just be on your turn. You should just be draw, land, go. Unless you can play Ugin or a Planeswalker. Just draw, land, go, counter everything I play, kill everything at the end of turn that I play, and if you can't do that, dig through time at the end of your turn.
Yep.
Like, don't fucking sorcery speed, dig through time with nothing in your graveyard and three tapped out lands, and then spend 4 minutes trying to figure out your dig through time. You know, and like I said, it's something that I struggle with because I know saying that out loud, I know that that's difficult. There's difficult decisions that we made. If you don't know how to play your control deck, it can be really daunting to sit there because you don't want to make the wrong decision. And that's the thing. When you're playing even Abzan, it's like there aren't decisions to make when you play Abzan. The decision is like, do I Hero's Downfall his guy or just play another threat?
Yeah.
Do I play one of the two copies of this bomb in my hand, like Anafenza or Siege Rhino, or do I just play one copy and kill his guy with the other mana that I have? Like, you know, the decisions are a lot easier, especially at a casual level.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a casual player and you see somebody win with a control deck and you're like, wow, that looks really cool, I want to try that because I'm sick of fucking Cackling Doom and Abzan all day. And then you go and buy it. Yeah, the first couple FNMs, it's going to be fucking rough. But it's like, I don't get anything for that. I don't get anything for going like 1-1-2, right? And I had to pay $10 to go to my FNM, and then I had to pay $10 basically to sit there and watch you not do anything and waste my time. And that's what you're doing, right? It's, I'm not saying that like, fuck you, you're wasting my time. I'm saying like, my time is being wasted because literally I have no cards in hand, my graveyard's full, but you have no creatures to kill with the only delve spell in my deck, and I have no cards in hand, I have 108 mana. I'm literally just like, oh, it's my turn, flip over the top card of my library, it's a this. Can I play that, or do you counter it? Okay, it resolves. Okay, you Doomblade it, that's fine. Go. And then you spend 6 minutes, and then my turn, flip over the top card of my library. Oh, yeah. It's a land. Play it. Scry. Scry that land to the bottom. Go. Oh, take another 5 minutes playing two dig through times. Like, you should know, like, what you're doing. And I think that's the key to control decks that a lot of people don't realize. You should be, on my turn, you should be figuring out what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Whether it's, if he plays X spell, do I counter that?
And you should be thinking about, you should absolutely be thinking about, so if he does this, what do I do?
Yeah. If this, then that.
Yep.
That's your motto. If this, then that. If he does this, then I do that. And you should be thinking about it before he does this.
Yeah.
So if he plays X, I counter it, and if he plays Y, I kill it, and if he plays nothing, or if he plays Z, I dig through time at the end of his turn, untap, play Ugin, with 3 mana open, say go, he fucking loses.
Yeah.
So that your turn doesn't take so long, because you as the control player, you also don't want a bunch of draws.
No!
You don't want draws, you want wins.
But the draws the draws will keep you out of the top 8 too, right?
So, yeah, absolutely they will. Yeah. Absolutely they will. And you don't want to be going into like your winning in with 2 draws or 3 fucking draws. Like, you don't want that.
Yeah.
So like I said, that's something that I think is really big for players that are playing control, and especially with the influx of control. Like I said, we saw 0 control into, like, basically the field was mono control.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal.
Everyone wants to try the new cards out, right?
And I mean, you know what? It was great. I didn't, and like, I'm not trying to toot my own horn here. I'm just saying, just for conversation, like, I loved playing against these new decks.
Yeah.
I loved that instead of being like, oh, this format's fucking garbage, I hate it, I'm leaving, I was like, how can we beat this, Jeremy?
Nice.
And then I took Jeremy's phone, and he has this app on it, and I said, like, show me all the blue and black cards in standard, and it filtered all that shit, and I just went through every card, and I was like, what about this card? What about this card? What about this card? Instead of just being like, fuck this format, Thragtusk sucks, this is garbage. Because I feel like it's not as bad as Thragtusk, and I'm okay with that.
Good!
And like I said, it's it was cool, and I said right to the guy, I said, like, good wins, like, great work, like, your deck's really cool, and then I talked to Jeremy, and I was like, this is the problem we're going to run into every FNM. How do we beat this guy's deck? We have to be able to beat this guy's deck because there's 10 of them here.
Yeah.
And every match we played was control. Every single match.
So there's a deck that came in third at the Premier IQ this weekend that I think is pretty interesting that might do a really good job of owning blue-black control. Okay? Now, I understand that you're looking to potentially just, like, tune your Abzan list to win, but...
or just play blue-black control. I mean... let's remember that when blue-black do-nothing was doing really well,
I
mean, if you can't beat him, join him. I just loved playing it and just absolutely being the guy that's taking 3-second control turns.
Yeah.
and then not letting you play Magic. I love not letting you play Magic. It's the best feeling in the world.
I mean,
like, no,
that's
I
all counter. You did with Delver, right? You're just like, play a Delver, flip a Delver, counter everything you do.
Counter everything you do. I don't care. Oh, it got through, bounce it. Sword, dead.
Yeah.
Go home.
Yeah.
Right? I love doing that. It's so fun for me. I love playing. I love decision-making decks. You know? They get the juices flowing. They keep you sure. But tell me about your deck.
So, Jacob Eckert played a Temur aggro deck. Temur is obviously a clan that is near and dear to my heart, and, you know, a big fan of green fatties, red burn, and counter magic. So, this deck takes advantage of the new cards, Flamewake Phoenix, Shaman of the Great Hunt. This card, obviously very, very good, especially that against the control strategy. So, he's the 4-2 for 4 mana with haste.
Yeah.
Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, put a 1/1 counter on it.
Yeah.
And then you've
got
the, like, drawing cards. So super good. But you combine that with, so Elvish Mystics, Rattleclaw Mystics for the ramp package, Flamewake Phoenix, which is 2/2s with haste that keep coming back if you've got 4 powers in play.
Yeah.
But what's really neat about that card is if you've got Shaman of the Great Hunt in play, then those combat damages add up, right? Because they're getting 1/1 counters.
Yeah.
But it also played 4 copies of a new card from Fate Reforged called Frostwalker.
Yeah.
Which is a 4-1 for blue and a 1.
Yeah, a 2 mana 4-1.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely
gross.
It's an
interesting card. It's an interesting card because it, like, kills your Caryatids.
Oh, yeah.
Or just puts you to 16 after you've played a Scryland.
Yeah. I know, right? Like, wham! But, like, you combine that with, you know, Flamewake Phoenix. So being able to, you know, bring Phoenix back from the graveyard with that card is really good.
Yeah.
You know, you have Ferocious for Shaman. Also turns on Ferocious for cards like Wild Slash, which has 2 copies in the main deck. So that's the Shock, right? Which is also super good against Heroic.
Yeah,
right?
And Crater's Claw.
And Crater's Claws, right? Turns that on too. But then in the sideboard, you've got, you know, copies of Stubborn Denial and Barrage of Boulders, both which get turned on by Ferocious.
Yeah.
So, you know, pretty sweet cards. The deck looked really tight. It looks sorely underpowered against cards like, oh, I don't know, Drown in Sorrow?
Yeah.
Because
Fire
everything
Blade.
Is an X2 except for the Knuckle Blade. Right? Like, it's just everything is really, really weak.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if nobody's playing Drown in Sorrow,
yeah.
Then this deck just wrecks up.
Like I said, like, at our store, because it's all control, there was people that were main decking Drown and Thoreau. Like, four Drown and Thoreau. Like, fuck. Fuck you guys. Why did you guys get the memo that control was going to crush us, and we didn't get that fucking memo?
There were 3 blue-black control decks in the top 10 of the
ACG
event.
I know, and, like, we're looking at it, and I'm just like, my dick is so hard. I'm just like, the guy goes, like, Ashiok, flip over 3 cards, and I'm just like, yeah. He hits, like, Courser, Rhino, Land. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, fuck this. And then he just goes, yeah, I'll make your Courser, and then I'll play a land and go up to 4, so that if you draw a Rhino, you can't kill me. And then I'll play an Ugin. Oh, okay. What does Ugin do? Oh, he starts at 7 and wraths the board? Fucking great. Now, here is a question that I have for you.
Okay.
Because you're a blue-black player. Well, you used to be.
Sure.
You fucking dirty trader.
okay.
So, what do you think? This is the super secret tech that I've kind of been poring over.
Okay.
What do you think of fucking Clever Imposter in these decks?
Oh,
It could be a 4 of. It could be a 1 or even a 2 of.
Okay.
How fucking crazy is this fucking card? You can play it as your second Purling Agent. You can play it as a Silumgar if they have a Silumgar. You can play it as a fucking 4 mana Ugin.
So, like, I think it. So, okay. So I think it's better in the Sultai deck than the blue-black control deck.
Yeah.
And I will tell you why. I will justify my answer.
Raj?
Most of the blue-black control decks are playing some between 5 and 7 copies split between Crux of Fate and Perilous Vault.
Yes. Yeah.
Which functionally is clearing the board every turn or few turns or whatever. So I don't know if you're going to want to play that sort of card when your goal is to wipe your opponent's board anyway.
No, it's absolutely true.
But
even things like play an Ugin, wrath the board, right? Like, not obviously in the same turn because you'd need 12 mana for this.
Play another Ugin, yeah.
play the Ugin, like after you use his ability, play the second Ugin.
Yeah.
Right? Ashiok, make a guy, play second Ashiok, like return from exile, one of the guys, and then play it as your second Ashiok and tick him up again, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's, like, I think those are really powerful turns. And is it non-land permanent?
Yeah.
So you can play it as another Perilous Vault. Like, if they play a Perilous Vault on you, or the thing I really like about it is what happens if they play a fucking Rhino, and then you just untap and play a Rhino yourself?
Yeah.
So you basically time walk them. Their Rhino can attack through your Rhino. Their Rhino drain, you drain back.
I don't know. Like, you know? Maybe I don't love it so much for those matchups, but like I said, I don't think I like it for blue-black just because my goal is to kill everything all the time.
Yeah.
So I do think that it's fine in Sultai, though. I think that it's perfectly reasonable in the Sultai strategy because, you know, they're playing a bit more permanence. They're sort of, like, jockeying for a bit more of a board position as opposed to, you know, just, like, keeping the board clear every turn.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could totally see it as, you know, a couple copies in the sideboard to be pretty cute. Because, I mean, the card quality is just generally going up, too. Right, yeah. Every set. So,
yeah.
So that's
kind of what I was thinking. Is a couple copies maybe in the board.
Yeah.
I really want to try this card out. I think that it's going to blow people out because A, they don't expect it.
Yep.
And B, it's non-land permanent. It's always going to be the best permanent on the board.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Planeswalker, artifact, creature. Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's always going to be whatever it is. And a lot of the stuff, like I said, because the card quality is going up, it like its stock automatically goes up because the stuff around it is going up. I mean, the Devil Blue maybe hurts it.
Yep.
It definitely
you know, impacts, yeah.
But, I mean, mana is pretty fine right now. You have temples, you got the gain lands, you got tri lands.
Yep.
You have mana confluence if you need it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, mana generally is pretty good. And you have fetches. Like, it's not, you know, mana's generally pretty good. So, you know, Devil Blue is a little bit more difficult, but I don't think it holds anything against it. And like I said, like, having it, like, if you're behind, having it copy something that's going to kill you, having it copy their own, you know, maybe they play a copy of, like, Liliana Vess. Well, maybe you get a Liliana Vess, you know?
Yeah.
So.
If they play Garrick, you know, Apex Predator, then you play him and use the plus ability to kill their Garrick.
Kill their Garrick, and you have a Garrick. Like, you know what I mean?
That seems
like something I like doing.
That seems dirty.
Yeah. And they paid 8 for it, and you paid 4.
Yeah.
So you still have 4 mana open to counter whatever they play next.
Yep.
Right? So, that like it's turns like that really get me going for decks like this.
So I think that in order for that card to be good, you really want to play it in a deck where bring it in matchups where you want to copy cards that you know you're going to get a better return on with 4 mana than they are getting with whatever they're spending on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's probably Planeswalkers. It's probably big dumb creatures, like,
yeah,
you know, things like that. So,
you know, and even things like matching their Hornet Queen with your Hornet Queen or their rock with your rock so that they can't attack your Planeswalkers is something that I would be fine with.
Oh, yeah. It's perfectly reasonable.
You know, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah. Give it a shot, man. That sounds sweet.
I'm going to try it. I'll let you guys know.
Nice. Well, I've been playing an infinite amount of Team Geist. The Pro Tours.
In Modern.
The Pro Tours this weekend. And I'll be streaming Tuesday, Thursday. I think KYT tomorrow night is going to battle me heads up with Junk.
Sweet.
Card that I have fallen hopelessly and madly in love with, I 100% agree with you, is Valorous Dance.
Yep.
I can't say enough good things about this stupid magic card.
Yeah.
It is so broken and busted. I love it. I love the card so much. I didn't think I would love it as much as I do, but...
Yeah, I didn't either. Every single time I played it, it was like, my opponent was just like, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So as an example, like, so MTG Goldfish has a really great way to kind of like go through and sort through metagames based on paper, modern dailies, and all that sort of stuff. So very, very good resource. You should check it out. Jay, I want you to do me a favor. I'm going to pull up this junk list that 4-0'd a daily on the 1st of February.
Yesterday. For those listening at home, it was Monday. I mean, Sunday.
Yeah. You just click on this junk. Let's do it this way. Yeah. Okay. So, do me a favor. This is the second place list from the Modern IQ in Washington. Let's just do this.
Sure.
Okay. So, what creature is this?
Karmgoyf.
And how big is it generally on average?
3/4.
Or 4/5, right?
Or 4/5, yeah. Okay.
And what's this card?
Siege Rhino.
Okay. And how big is it? 4/5? How many creatures is that so far? 8, right?
8.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's this card?
Tasker the Golden Fang.
How big is it?
4/5.
Okay. And there's one copy of him?
Yeah.
What
9.
What's this card?
Scavenging Ooze.
How large is it often?
Always big.
Either 3 or 4 plus?
Always, yeah.
Okay. And this card, Voice of Resurgence, right? Cute
yeah,
card.
Yeah, also good.
But when it dies, it leaves behind a friend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So when you combine it with this card here, what's this card?
Lingering Souls.
Okay, how big does that token get?
It's a 3/3 right away.
Like, okay, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what, 4, 8, 11, maybe 13 creatures?
That all are 3 or bigger?
That all die to Valorous Dance?
Yep.
Yeah. So, super dumb card. You know what else? You know what else is a really cool card? So, Blue-Red Twin. Pretty good deck, right?
Pretty good deck, yeah.
Okay. So, Blue-Red or the Rug Twins.
Yeah.
So, 4 copies of Tarmogoyf, right?
Yeah.
Sweet. So, there's this other card
Tarmogoyf
in the deck.
Twin. This, oh, Deceiver Exarch.
Deceiver Exarch. And what are the stats on that again?
Oh, it's a 1/4.
Oh, is it a 1/4? Oh, it is, isn't it?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I've been, like, really, really, really high on the card. And every time I play it, I just keep putting more and more copies in the deck because
yep.
It is just, like, the most crazy card for me right now. So we're pretty happy with it. So I would not be surprised to see me playing 4 copies of this card in bulk.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, like, target creature gains indestructible. So, I mean, when you play it with the Geist of St. Traff, yes, you can just attack and then make Geist indestructible and 4 your opponent. And it's
yeah.
actually not just 4ing your opponent, it's 8ing your opponent because your Geist still lives.
Yeah.
Right? So when you consider it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like, or Tron O-Stones you, and
yeah.
you're just like, nope. You know? As Curly is apt to say, get fuck nerd. Like, it's just, you know? But yeah, I've been like really, really, really happy with the list, and it just it's coming along. The numbers are tuning up. One of the cards that we've come to put in the deck, and we're feeling it's really shoring up a lot of our matchups, is actually Lingering Souls. Craig Wesco posted a list that was very similar to ours in numbers. Wasn't on the Valorous Dance tech, and you know that sort of stuff, but had 4 copies of Lingering Souls in the sideboard, and we really.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I got excited. But, so, do you play it just for the 2/2s, or, like, do you splash black?
So, we splash black.
Oh.
So, we're trying to decide whether it's 1 copy of Watery Grave.
Right.
As just the only black splash.
Right.
Or do we bring in, like, a Godless Shrine also.
Right.
As the other one, right? Because with the fetch lines and stuff, it's easy to find this card.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, we're trying to figure it out, but, like, even if you're playing a Snapcaster Mage to snap back Lingering Souls, like if somebody toasts your black land and that's what you're doing,
yeah,
then that's like if you want that effect, then it's not terrible,
right?
So, but yeah, it's like very good against Infect. It's very good against Junk. Like the only cards that have Trample against Junk are is Rhino,
mm-hmm.
which just eats it to some combination of Celestial Purge, Valorous Dance, Path to Exile, Snapcaster plus any of those cards.
Right.
Right, okay.
Jesus.
Right? And the other thing that's cute is by adding that little cute, like that tiny little black splash, in corner cases, it may come up where you get to use your Engineered Explosives for 4.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's one of those strange situations that came up in one game where I was playing against a guy that was playing, it was Maddie, actually, from Heavy Metal. I was playing against him, and he was playing his Junk deck that he asked me to get some feedback on, and he was playing, like, Angels and Rhinos.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you how much of a fucking beating that is.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're like
holy
staring
fuck.
Down your hand of Lightning Bolt and Lightning Helix going, what have I done wrong with my life?
Yeah.
You know, but like being able to like engineer explosives for 4, you know, clean both those problems up was pretty cute. So I don't know, like I'm not a fan of, you know, splashing. Like we've tried like Crackling Doom as a card that has been played
mm-hmm.
as a card for this list. And I just really don't feel like the payoff is there. I don't want to be committed to consistently being a four color deck.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because, I mean, I look at, like, Junk, for example, and Reduke posted a list on Channel Fireball today, and he's got, like, two Tech Edges and three Fulminator Mages out of the sideboard.
Right,
some
yeah.
Junk decks are playing, like, three copies of Tech Edge, plus, yeah. like, plus, and it's just like, you know, I don't want to be stuck in that scenario where I can't actually cast any of my spells.
Yeah.
So,
that's a problem.
It's a big problem often, right? And then Blood Moon yeah. also is a thing, too, right? So,
yep,
so you
Blood
really
Moon
don't...
is irrelevant.
Yeah, it's like a huge modern card.
Like
so
a
I,
relevant threat, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not really sold on that, but the just for one point of black mana for Lingering Souls, when the card is just so ridiculously powerful in the mid-range creature matchups,
uh-huh.
it's also really good against, like, Affinity. You know, because you just, like, vomit a bunch of guys on the table and block their dumb X1s.
Yeah.
You know, also decent against Infect. Same reasoning.
Same reasoning, yeah.
Right? So it's been a card that we're pretty happy with, and I think we're going to end up playing a full four soon. And I don't know if this deck is going to make it to the Pro Tour or not, but KYT is going to battle his Junk list, I think, and maybe his Infect list against me on Tuesday on stream. So that will have already happened. And then Thursday, I don't know whether I play a different deck or sort of like play against a different deck, but this week I'm doing like some pretty heavy in-depth match analyses and really trying to see what we can do to tighten this up for the BTO.
Yeah, right on.
And then after the Pro Tour, we'll look at it. But the deck's been performing really, really well. I went 4-1 with it on Friday night.
Nice.
So, I mean, that's fine. Like, we were running hot. We 3-0'd the draft and then 4-1'd.
Oh, sick.
Just, like, random shit after that. So,
yeah.
So, and I was, you know, pretty tired by the time. Like, we jumped in the Modern Daily at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
In the morning. So it was like
shit.
4 by the time I went to bed on a Friday, having already
yeah,
been up.
Jesus.
And yeah, it was
being old as fuck. Like I know what that's like.
Tell me about it, right?
Jesus.
So yeah, so I don't know. I'm really really happy with the deck. And what's really interesting to me is what we should try to predict for the modern metagame for the weekend. Like there's just so many different decks that are seeing a lot of play right now. And I mean, I don't know if there's anything that's going to break out in terms of a new deck, but I think we're going to see some pretty sweet variations of some existing ones, and it's the Pro Tour is going to be super exciting to watch. Like, you combine the fact that the limited format is actually just really great, you know?
Yeah,
the removal
yeah.
spread out well, the creatures are great, the decks are cohesive, that, you know, it rewards synergy and good drafting, you
yeah.
know, as opposed to just, like, bomb dropping. Now, don't get
yeah.
me wrong, you open the right bombs and they're going to carry you, but...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the synergistic drafting is such a big piece to this set and this format, and it makes me really happy. There's a lot of different play to the board states, given, you know, the mystery behind manifests and morphs, and, you know, adds
yeah.
to the nail-biting effect as a spectator. And then you add to that that the modern decks are so powerful, and you get to see these, like, really amazing interactions, but it's not quite as bad as Legacy, because Legacy... You can, like, watch somebody take, like, this 14-minute turn and on turn two.
Yeah.
Right? So, or, like, Sneak and Show Emrakul, you're dead. Like, I don't
yeah.
know. I feel like there's a bit more play, there's a lot of power, and it's still really, really exciting. So, I can't wait. I can't wait to watch the Pro Tour this weekend. So much crazy time.
Sick.
Yeah. And be cheering for sure. The guys aren't here, so we can't do our Pro Tour draft, but...
Right.
Like, Cheon is on a wicked eater.
Uh-huh.
I've got to go for the boy, you know. And like, Ifro is also always playing consistently well. Like, there's been a lot of really neat stuff happening. So, I don't know, man. Like, Willie Edel tweeted out, and I was making a comment about, you know, some of the junk lists are doing fairly well online. And, you know, actually, it's interesting because for the... Modern IQ in Indianapolis this weekend, there were no copies of Junk in the
wow.
top eight. Not one. Or, like, Junk, even. Right?
Yeah.
Like, Amulet Combo, Hate Bears, Red, White, Blue Control, Burn, Affinity, Zoo, Affinity, Burn. Like, that was the top eight.
Wow.
And so he made the comment say, like, there's no green-black decks in the top eight. What the hell? And so he said that somebody, you know, there's some guy that he knows he's literally playing 18 hours a day and hopes he nails the metagame right. And I laughed, and I said, well, you know, don't you just play whatever beats Junk, Robots, you know, Twin, and
yeah.
And like, and Storm? Because it's the Pro Tour? Like, don't you just do that and then win?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, it, the one thing that is a known quantity is that people will play the decks that they like.
Yeah.
But there's enough people that were on Birthing Pod and were on Blue Red Delver that now have to play something else.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do they turn to? Hopefully it's not just junk. Hopefully, you know, hopefully they're able to, you know, put together. I'd be really interested to see like a Malira Pod deck without Pod. So I'm not saying they should go to Chords or anything, but just like a black, green, white value deck.
Yeah.
Kitchen Finks, Restoration Angels, like yeah, all that sort yeah. of thing, and just like the mid range. But yeah. I don't know if it's good enough, but it seems like it could be pretty cool.
Yeah, it could be interesting.
Mm-hmm. So there's been lots of crazy stuff going on, and I just cannot wait to see what the Pro Tour actually brings us. Very, very exciting. Oh, God. Willie Edel playing black-green 4-0 to daily 5 days ago with 3 copies of Tectonic Edge and 3 copies of Fulminator Mage in the main deck. This is a nightmare. Wow. This is a nightmare come to life. Wow. I have to share this with you guys. That's retarded. Anyways. Sweet. So, yeah, any calls for the Pro Tour?
Nope. I don't know anything about anything. So, I can't really state. I really hope Valor Stance makes a mark.
Yes.
I'd like to see that card show up and slap some people in the face. But yeah, I just don't know enough about the format. I think that it's cool that they banned a whole bunch of shit.
Yep.
Recently, so that at least it won't just be me hearing about people complaining about Pod. So that's good.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't know. I just don't know enough about it.
Are you gonna watch this weekend?
I don't think so. I have my dad's birthday to do.
All right.
And so, you know, I think something that would be really interesting is I would watch more of these events if there was a newbie stream. And I've said this before, Dota 2, the International 4 last year, where they gave away $10 million, they had like 10 different streams for the same tournament. And they were official streams. And one of them was a newbie stream where they would say like, oh, you know, like to make the correlation of Magic, like, oh, he's playing Affinity. This is how this deck works. This is the card. Because there's a lot of cards where I'm just like, well, why would he fucking play that? Like, why would he do that? Now, that being said, there's a lot of cards where it's just like, yeah, okay, he's playing like Blue-Red Twin. His goal is to get to 4 mana and win the game on a combo. But, you know, there's decks where I just don't know what they're doing or why they're doing it or why that's good. And it would be nice to have an entertaining, casual way to watch that. And the same thing, like, this weekend, I didn't watch the Super Bowl. I could care less. I didn't even consider watching it.
God, no, that's terrible.
Now, that being said, had somebody in my zone said, like, hey, man, you want to come over and watch the Super Bowl? We're going to have a Super Bowl party. Bring your wife and let's chill. And, yeah, like, maybe I would have gone and maybe I would have cared to pick a team that, you know, was the team that nobody else wanted to pick just to be that guy. And you know what I mean? Like, because for me, like, I don't give a shit about football. I barely give a shit about professional hockey. Like, I'm a highlight guy. I'm not a watch 10 hours of Magic guy. If somebody links me to an insane play like the Gabriel Nassif Cruel Ultimatum, yeah, I'm going to watch that and be like, wow. But I don't want to watch 8 hours of Magic to see that happen one time. Same with hockey. Same with even the international. Like, I watched zero games of the inter. I play Dota every day. I've been playing Dota for like 15 years. I've watched zero matches of Dota except for the grand finals of the international. And I watched it like 3 weeks after it happened because I heard that it was insane. If I hadn't heard that it was insane and seen like some highlights of it, I just wouldn't have fucking watched it. And I skipped all of the in-between. Because it was like the grand finals are, I think, a best of 5. And it went to 5 games, I think. And in between each game, there was like bloody blahs from people. And I just skipped all that garbage. I skipped all the player interviews. I skipped all the You know, I just skipped all that stuff because I just didn't care about it. I don't know enough about it to care about it, and I don't have time. And so it was really great to just watch the newbie stream and have them just be super casual about it, not super, I don't know how else to put it, but like not super, like, I don't know, nerdy about it, like not super, I don't know, like too into it almost, if that's a thing. You know what I mean? It's like, for example, I tweeted today that we're getting the band back together for D&D.
Oh, okay.
And I don't mean to shit on anyone that plays D&D, but there's a social stigma about people that play D&D, myself True. Now included, because I've been playing it for like 2 years now, and everybody knows what social stigma I'm talking about. And it follows us into Magic a lot of times, too. It follows video game nerds, too. It's just one of those things that's part of our culture. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that it exists, and I'm saying that I stayed away from the game for a very long time because every person that I knew that played it filled out that stereotype. So, like, personal appearance and hygiene aside, or anything like that, the thing that I have like trouble with the most is the level of enthusiasm that you have being a bad thing. I think there's a difference between like being really enthusiastic about something and the difference between it like being your entire life, like similar to like, I guess, like a football jock. Like, I think it's possible for me to play football in high school, and then there's those guys where like football's the only thing that matters to them. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I think I run into that with Magic a lot. It's just like there's people that like certain decks, or there's people that like a certain player, or there's people that watch the Pro Tour, and then like you can't have a regular conversation with them about it as a casual person. Because their enthusiasm like overwhelms you and takes away from the entire experience for me.
So you're saying like it leaves you feeling smaller or just like less, like because it's very clear in the discussion that you're not equals on the subject?
Yeah, like there's that. And then there's also just the fact that like I just can't even comprehend. It'd be like me asking like an astrophysicist to explain like rocket flight. Right?
Yeah.
Because they just can't do that. They physically can't. They'd have, there's like, well, first you got to start like this, and then there's this, and then there's this, and then there's this, and then there's this.
Yeah.
And by the time, like, you've gotten that out, I'm just like, I bet I stopped listening before you did.
So it's like the Sheldon episode. It's like the episode of Big Bang where Penny asks Sheldon to explain what Leonard does for work. And then he goes through, like, the entire history of physics.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know what? People are like that. Like, and I'm learning now as an old person where you go to, like, regular parties that aren't, like, drunk booze Mario Kart fest.
Sure.
Like mingling parties where everybody wears sweaters and drinks wine, or nice beers, not like canned cases.
Yes, yes, craft beers, yes, delicious
yeah.
beers. Yes,
so like those people, it's like yeah, there's a difference between like, hey Jay, what do you do for work? And I'm like, I'm an electrician. And hey Jay, what do you do for work? I'm like, well, I'm on the path to become an electrician. Just went through first year. I'm now a second year. I work at the airport doing mainly underground services, running. You know, tech cable from like demarcation points to panels and then tying those panels into gate operation and inspection services. And it's just like, shut the fuck up. Just tell me you're an electrician.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, hey, what does Affinity do? It tries to play 100 guys out on turn two or three and kill you.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's right. That's just an example. But like, oh, okay. And what's Affinity playing against here? Oh, he's playing against Blue-Red Twin? What does that guy do? He tries to stall the game until he has an infinite combo where he makes infinite guys and then just kills you. But then there'd be guys that are like, well, it's not technically infinite. It's like an arbitrary number that you have to pick. And you're like, yeah, but I don't care. Just tell me infinite.
Sure.
For the purposes of me getting interested in this, you have to make it simplified for me. Like, same with football, right? Football's very – like, people hate John Madden because he'll say stuff like, what they're going to try to do here is either pass or run the ball. And it's like, yeah. Everybody's like, yeah, John, you fucking idiot. That's how offense works. There's literally nothing else they could do on first and you stupid. But for guys like me or like my wife who wants to be into football but she doesn't know anything about it,
yeah.
That's super helpful because – we don't think about that. So when somebody just says that, it's not like we're like, oh, right, because we're idiots. We're just not actively thinking about that. So it's the difference between, like, we were talking about earlier with the control decks. There's the difference between the guy playing the control deck who's actively thinking, well, he's going to either try to run the ball or throw the ball here. So I'm going to try to defend against that. And the other guy who's, like, waiting for you to throw the ball and then, like, oh, I should catch that instead. Right?
Yeah.
And that's what it's like for me, watching Modern, watching any kind of magic. It's just like, it's so long and drawn out, and I find that there's like one type of coverage, and it just doesn't speak to me, that type of coverage.
I think, have you tried to watch any of the standard Star City coverage lately?
No, and okay. Oh, sorry, and the other thing I was going to say is, because I'm not personally interested in it,
yeah,
it's difficult to motivate myself to watch it alone. Like, hey, if you were like, hey, Jay, come over and watch the Star City Games standard thing. We'll have, like, beers and popcorn, and we'll just chill and watch it. I'd be fine with that. That's the same as me watching a movie or football or hockey with you,
right? Sure.
But I don't have someone to watch that with.
That's too bad.
So for me, it's like, I'm just going to sit in my basement and watch it on my TV by myself. And then, like, if something cool happens, I'm going to be like, oh, never mind, everybody. Oh, Breets, my cat. Did you see that crazy thing? but when we were watching, when I was streaming Fate Reforged pre-release with Tyler Bloom, it was amazing. I had a great time watching people play Magic.
Yeah.
I thought it would be mind-numbingly boring, but I had a great time because I had someone to be like, did you fucking see that? And then Tyler would be like, my God, did you believe that he baited out that? And he, did you see what he did there? He went into the tank and figured out that he needed to do exactly these things, and I had no idea, right? This is not, like, this isn't scripted or me. We're not on the same levels.
Yeah,
Tyler's so high. Tyler is so much higher above me, right? So he's like, he did this, and I'm learning from Tyler live while he's saying that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I did not fucking realize that. What I did realize was he fucking crushed him. That was insane. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think if I had something like that, it would be a little bit more fun for me.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I don't want to just say I'll never watch it again. I'm sure there'll be times where I am. I mean, I have something to do this weekend, so I can't. But I would like to kind of get back into it and maybe pay attention to it. I just find it's so difficult for me to get motivated because of the past and because, like I said, I don't have like a buddy to share it with. What am I going to do after spending 8 hours watching it? I'm going to just go to bed? That feels like a waste of a day to me.
So what I found is Star City coverage in general, like Cedric and Pat Sully are amazing.
Yeah.
They're amazing. Like,
yeah,
just,
I think that's
amazing.
That's a given.
So I think like they've been doing it so well. The production quality in the stream is so absurd. They really do it upright. So that it's standard also, so it's your wheelhouse. And if that's something that you wanted to, you know, if you wanted to break in somewhere,
yeah,
then I'd recommend you start there.
For sure, yeah.
Now, alternatively, if you were to, say, tune into the Pro Tour Top 8, you get this unique, it's the Top 8 of a Pro Tour vibe.
Okay.
You see the most premium play. These people are masters of their decks. Like, at the Pro Tour, it's Wizards' best foot forward. Oftentimes, LSV's in the booth if he's not, like,
winning,
right? So, unfortunately, he's been in the booth a lot. And and ultimately, it's a positive experience. Like, BDM is good. Combined with LSV, it's sweet. Marshall's pretty decent. Like, you know, there's all sorts of amazing stuff that happens during that Pro Tour. It's like there's $40,000 on the line. Like, that is that's a crazy money for a lot of these guys, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's the crown jewel. So, so it's nice. I certainly enjoy it. And you're right though. Like, I remember some of the most fun we had was we were watching. So when Will and KYT came up, and they stayed at my place over the weekend, and this was during the time of GP Charlotte, which was the largest modern tournament
still
to date. And we put it on Twitch on my TV, and we watched coverage. Like, Lily and I and the boys, and Alana was sitting there as well, and we watched coverage all day.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That makes a difference. Like, I'll sit through a bad movie if my wife's with me.
Yep.
And I'll not realize how bad it is. But if I have to sit through it by myself, it's like,
I'm
my
done,
fucking
turn it off.
God.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It took me 3 tries to watch the interview.
Yeah.
Like, I just was like, fuck, what am I doing with my fucking life that it's so bad that I have to watch this? But if somebody else was there, even if the jokes aren't funny, I'll they're funnier because I'm sharing it. It's I'm sure that some psychologist or somebody who studied the human brain or emotional level more, maybe like neuroscientist Iceman Ted Sloan, he maybe could tell me why in a social setting I enjoy things that I normally don't enjoy. Because I know humans are social animals. I just don't – it doesn't make sense to me that I'd be like, this is garbage. And then if Scott's there, I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, whatever. But yeah, like I think I would love to do something like that. And there's what are those places called? Gamers do them all the time, and they go to like a place, like they'll go to like a sports bar.
Yeah.
But instead of it being sports, it's like Counter-Strike, and they call it something. They have a word for it. And people have tried to do that here. They've tried to get like, because there's some bars that as longtime listeners of the show and you yourself, Scotty, Broken City Magic, playing Magic in a fucking bar.
I love it.
Every week,
so jealous.
You know, there's bars that are obviously accommodating to the nerd culture and like it and want to promote it. And there was bars that were getting that together, and I can't for the life of me remember the name of this activity. But basically, what it is yeah, you go to like a pub, and instead of having sports and shit on TV, everyone's there to watch the Pro Tour,
dude.
And so we're all hanging out, eating wings, drinking beer, but we're watching the Pro Tour.
That's insane. And, go and do that.
Yeah, and like that's what I mean. Like if something like that pops up in Calgary, I'll fucking go there if I have at least one other guy to go with.
Yeah.
But like, I haven't seen them come up lately.
Yeah.
People were trying to get them done for, again, Dota for the International,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't pan out because they kind of didn't. Like, they kind of left it to the last minute kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, how fucking... That's like going to the bar to watch UFC.
So I'm saying.
It's like 100 times better.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? I would love to do that. I would fucking easily go to a bar and watch the Pro Tour with a bunch of dudes. You know? I might not go for 8 hours. I might not go all fucking day. But it's like kind of like the World Cup, you know?
No, but you know what? If you know that's what you're going to do, you can kind of like check in periodically.
Yeah.
You know, find out how people are doing. And then you show up, and it's like, you know, top eight or, you know, last couple of rounds closing out day one or whatever. Yeah, exactly. You know?
Or you pop in, and then you pop out, and then you pop back in.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah. No, I definitely think that that's a really good way to kind of cut your teeth back on coverage. But
yeah,
I mean, the other thing that I found, too, that can be neat is, so with the hosting function of your stream,
mm-hmm.
So what you can do is you can host another stream on your channel, okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you can watch it while you're sitting on your stream page,
yeah, okay?
With your chat open.
Oh, yeah, that makes a difference.
So what that allows you to do is your buddies can come and hang out with you in your chat and watch Pro Tour coverage that you're streaming from another feed.
That seems pretty cool.
Right? So, and it's your chat, so you can say whatever you want.
Yeah, it's not like the Pro Tour chat or whatever.
No, which is heavily moderated. It doesn't tolerate hate speech and that sort of shit. But,
right. Not that I promote hate speech, but I would love to just be in a casual setting where I'm like, holy fuck, this guy's the worst, and not get banned for...
Correct.
Like, nine more years.
9 more years.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's another way you can do it, too. I've had scenarios, too, where I've watched a Pro Tour and I've just had like a bunch of buddies on Skype.
Yeah.
And we're just watching the Pro Tour coverage and we're all Skyping in on the same call and you know, just talking shit there too. So, but, I don't know. The internet's a powerful thing.
That's true.
So yeah, I can't wait. I wish KYT all the best. I hope that we can put him into fighting shape. He has been losing every single one of his drafts that he's tried to play in the new format.
Yep, typical KYT.
Which is fine, because that's typical KYT, right? Like, he'll just keep losing, and then all of a sudden, he's like, well, this tournament matters. Boom, 3-0, 3-0. Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
That's how he operates.
So that's fine. You know, I asked him how he's doing. He's like, yep, losing all my drafts. He's like, not worried. Okay.
Not worried, exactly. Losing all my drafts, feeling fine.
Yeah. So that's cool. And, right. And yeah, I mean, that's going down this weekend. Oh, I played fucking... Did I tell you guys last week I played fucking Commander for... No, because I think it happened on the weekend.
Yeah.
Maybe? I played, like, 9 hours of Commander.
Holy fuck.
And drank a lot of beer.
Nice.
Had a shit ton of fun.
Right on.
Yeah. So, was very, very happy. Decks I played were Derevi, because he's, like, super value all day. Just cute little dumb guys that are inconspicuous until all of a sudden, oh, you have how much mana?
Yeah.
So that's sweet. And it plays a bunch of gods, so the threats are fairly resilient.
Right on.
I also played with my Animar deck with the new Shaman of the Great Hunt.
Right.
Which is sweet when all your guys are getting bigger and your board state's insane and you pay 4 mana to draw like 9 cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then the other deck that I played a whole bunch was the Child of Alara deck. Child of Alara lands right deck.
On. Yeah.
And it was also a super busted amount of fun. Glacial right Chasm on. Is a perfectly fair and balanced magic card, and when you get Rings of Brighthearth and Magosi the Water Veil, your opponents want to punch you in the mouth.
Yeah. That's like the Riku deck. The Riku deck is like that.
Yeah. So it was good. I had a really good time.
Sweet.
Fun times. Had all the boys over. And note to all of you, the Untapped got a lot of love over the last little bit. I've had a lot of people kind of, you know, jumping on board and following me on Untapped, so that's great. And my Untapped got a lot of love during that event. Dragon's Milk, outstanding stout. Apocalypse, less good.
Okay.
Apocalypse was a... it's a smoked stout. It's supposed to taste like bacon in it.
Yeah.
So when you pop the lid and smell it, it smells like bacon.
Yeah.
But then you pour the stout, and it's really thin, and it doesn't have a lot of body, and it tastes off, and all the rest of stuff. So, less good.
Right, less
good. But, those were good beers. So, those are my beer reviews of the week. Pick them up.
Nice.
They were good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, Dragon's Milk, 10 out of 10, would drink again.
Sweet.
Yeah. How was your birthday party?
Oh, man, it was sick. I currently am sporting the world's worst mullet, because it's not a mullet. My wife was like, hey, I know how to cut a mullet. So instead of paying $20 for a fake haircut and then having to get your hair cut again after the party, I'll just cut your hair. And I'm like, okay. And then halfway through the haircut, she's like, I'm pretty sure I don't know how to cut a mullet. So great. So my hair looks ridiculous.
Okay.
But it was good. We went to Value Village and we got a sweet costume. I went as
So what was the theme of your party?
It was an 80s party, 1985, because that's when I was born. So I went as like Uncle Remus. So I wore like the dad tuxedo of like acid wash tight jeans and a jean jacket.
Oh,
and then underneath I had like a dark blue but very busy patterned Hawaiian untucked shirt.
Sure.
And then I had a fanny pack, a Blue Jays fanny pack.
Okay.
And then I had a mullet that was terrible.
Oh,
and then Megan went as like the typical 80s, like, high school hip, like, valley girl, like, bubblegum girl.
Uh-huh.
So she had big hoop earrings and big glowing neon bracelets and necklaces with the off-the-shoulder, like, bright pink shirt.
Yeah.
And the leggings that are, like, bright yellow and leg warmers. And she had a jean vest on. And
oh my God.
Did, like, the side ponytail with crimps.
No way!
Yeah. And then Dennis from my wedding party that you know. He fucking, I'm like, that guy is the man, and I'm super happy that I'm friends with him every day.
Okay.
But he came in the tightest dad jeans I've seen him ever wear, and then he wore like he went to Value Village and he found an Ed Hardy hoodie, which is not 80s, everybody knows, but it looked so fucking 80s. It was like pink and purple and like with a weird hot pattern
thing
all over it. And it was tight as fuck. And he shaved steps into his hair.
No way!
Yeah. I had no idea he was doing this. He
fucking
just crushed it. And then his wife showed up as the older version of Megan, like the college version. Like,
yeah.
So Megan's costume is like the high school girl. And his wife showed up as the college girl. So like the big, like rose-rimmed, like giant goggle glasses that are like half-tinted.
Yeah.
And then she had like the... almost like the like a jellyfish, that haircut. Not like a bowl cut, but it was like crimpy. But it was like that bloop bloop. And then she had like a big green sweater on that went down to her knees and had these ugly patterns all over it, like a Windows screensaver. And then her pants were like those teal track pants that look like ski pants.
Yep.
Oh my god. And then Brian, easy beasy, Brian Jemba, Pro Tour. Well, he hasn't been on the Pro Tour, but GP, I don't know, top 16, I think. And he works at Phoenix Comics, super bro. He came as fucking ZZ Top because he's never cut his hair or his beard, and it's like, he looks like basically Mufasa.
Yeah.
So he came as ZZ Top, and then I had someone come as Miami Vice and Pat Benatar. And then Morgan, Megan's cousin, who was also in the wedding, she wore her mom's jeans from when her mom was pregnant with her oldest son from like 22 years ago that were like all the way up to like her boobs, like the mom jean supreme, and had like an Aerosmith sweater tucked in that was also her mom's from when they went to Aerosmith in like 1984.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was, and then there was like 10 or 20 other people that didn't dress up because they were fucking losers. But it was great. We had a great time. I think the entire night I drank maybe 4 beers.
Oh.
Yeah, like I was having a great time, but we weren't drinking very much. Like, I was mingling a lot, and it was really fun. And then about halfway through the party, because I had an 80s music montage on, and then I had on the TV, on repeat and on mute, I had The Breakfast Club. And so about halfway through the party, I'm just like sitting down to take like a rest, and like my jeans are super tight, like you can see everything. And I'm like, so I'm trying to like sit down and just like give them a little bit of a relaxing cut. And I'm like, fuck, you know what we should do right now, Brian, is we should do bad lip syncing of fucking Breakfast Club. And Brian's like instantly in and just starts going. And we had like 8 people, and it was the scene in Breakfast Club where they're in the library after they've all kind of smoked weed-ish, and they're like all sitting around and talking really deeply and stuff. There's like the scene where the weird chick dumps out her purse, and then there's the scene where like Emilio Estevez like runs and punches air and shit because he's high.
Yeah.
And like, so we bad lip-synced that, and there was like 8 of us doing it, and it was fucking amazing. It was so awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, it was super fun. It was super great. So it would have been nice if we could have fit a game or two in there, like played some Wolf with a bunch of people, or played like Ticket to Ride, or just any kind of cool, maybe like multiplayer kind of party game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I said, it was pretty sweet anyway.
Nice.
So yeah. But other than that, I didn't really get to play a whole lot of Magic because I had to fucking change an alternator out of my truck.
Yeah, what the hell is that?
My alternator died while I was driving, which basically powers your entire car, yeah. FYI, for everybody out there.
Yeah.
So I lost, like, I lost everything
dummy
but
feed.
My brake. Yeah, exactly. So I lost everything but my brakes. I didn't have power steering, didn't have blinkers. It was middle of the night, so, like, I was deathly afraid of someone just smashing into me. But yeah, so I fixed that myself by watching a 5-minute, like, the guy does it in 5 minutes on YouTube, and it's not like he does, like, a speed run of it. He's just like, yeah, you take out these 2 bolts, you take out these 2 bolts, and you're fucking, you rotate the alternator out. Yeah, that doesn't fucking happen. He edited it. It was bullshit. It took me 8 hours to do on the fucking weekend.
Oh my god!
My hand is shredded, and I bled everywhere. Like, it was just fucked. So I didn't get to play any Magic on Sunday.
Oh, man.
So, something I do want to talk about, though, really quickly.
Sure.
I was talking to Heather Dawn from Gathering Magic fame and EMT in Vegas fame, my little country bumpkin. I don't know if that's a derogatory term, actually, so maybe I shouldn't call her that. Maybe it's like Newfie, where we got in really big trouble for saying that, but I don't mean it offensively.
Sure.
Anyway, I don't want to ruin this because the person that I'm talking about kind of is a super fan of the show.
Okay.
And I want it to be a surprise.
Okay.
But basically, she's told me about a situation in Vegas where, actually, I'm just going to say it because the dad is a super fan of the show, and I want to surprise the dad too, but I think I'll just surprise the kid instead. And this is, like, super upsetting. I told this to Megan. She's like, this makes me want to cry, and I was like, I almost am crying. So, Heather was just talking. Heather's a storyteller on Twitter.
Yes.
Right? She doesn't talk to anybody in particular. She just says, like, a big, long story, and then people interact with her, and it's actually kind of great. So she said, there's a kid in my EDH group, because Heather plays EDH pretty prolifically, and she said, I think he's turning 12, like 11 turning 12, and for his birthday, he had to choose between going to the pre-release or having a birthday party. And not, like, going to the pre-release for his birthday party, like, with all of his little nerdy Magic friends. Like, he had to choose to do one or the other because his family can only afford one because I think there's 4 or 5 kids.
Sure.
And there's a sole provider.
Yeah.
So it's a, you know, and I mean, like, it, people have it harder than that. People don't. But this story kind of touched my heart or whatever. And so Heather says, and Heather's like the salt of the earth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So she says, I think what we've decided to do as a group, the EDH group, is we're going to throw him a birthday party. He chose to go to the pre-release, but we're going to throw him a birthday party.
That's
as
awesome.
A surprise.
Yeah.
So how awesome is that, right? Because I was just thinking about it, like, how terrible is that? Like, this 11-year-old slash 12-year-old kid, like, has to pick and can't have a – and he picked pre-release because he likes it so much, but then he can't have, like, a birthday party?
Yeah, it's awful.
Like, that's so terrible. I feel so bad for him. So I immediately was like, you need to give me their address or your address. I need to send this kid something. So I'm going to go through all my magic cards. I have, I think, a box of M15 that I've worked out a deal with a local store to trade for. I think what I'm going to do is half a box each of Fate Reforged and Con so that they can draft the format.
Nice.
I talked to Brian, Easy Beezy, and he was on board. Like, I was like, I was telling him the story. I wasn't trying to, like, get him to also donate. But he said, this kid likes EDH, and I said, he loves fucking EDH. He loves it, and he likes black and red decks. And Brian says, give me a deadline, and I'm going to make this guy a deck. So Brian's going to build this kid an EDH deck.
Wow.
I ordered a bunch of cube stuff from Face-to-Face, and I asked them to include tokens because I'm running out, and I constantly am getting asked to sign tokens. I'm just giving them away.
Yeah.
Even tokens that aren't mine. Like, people don't realize I'm on the show or anything. They're just like, I'll play a Sal 4-4 Angel token or something, and they'll be like, oh my god, that's so hilarious or so cool or whatever. Or I'll play, like, the A-Team one where we're all beat up, like I'm wearing the dress and
God,
we're all
it's my
hung
favorite.
Over.
I have the original art, like, big framed for that.
Oh, it's, really? Yeah, it's so insane, the Hangover art. And, like, they'll be like, oh, wow, that's so cool. Or, like, oh, it's He-Man, like, Canadian He-Man. And they don't realize it's you.
Yeah.
And I'll just give them away all the time to people. So I asked them to send me, with my cube order, a bunch of tokens. So I think I'm going to sign a bunch of them and send them down. I don't know if he'll even care about something like that. But I personally, like, really want to make this kid, I don't know, sunshine and rainbows or something. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That broke my heart. That broke my heart in a million pieces that he had to pick not having a birthday party to go to a pre-release.
Agree.
You know? How fucking heartbreaking is that? And you know what? This box of, like, M15 that I have, that was originally a box of, like, Avacyn Restored.
So you just keep trading in these old boxes.
Yeah, because Avacyn was a shit format. And I didn't want to play it, and I had enough packs that I was just carrying around, like, a bag full of packs.
So, it's too bad, because M15 is actually a sweet draft format.
It is.
And the
it
cards is. That are in the set are actually, like, the good ones are actually worth, like, a lot of
Yeah, and they're valuable, yeah. But, I mean, like I said, like, Cons has Fetchland.
Sure.
And it's the newest set, then, you know, I mean, and that's the thing is, I would rather, I can just buy those cards when I want. This kid can't do that. His dad can't do that for him either. So I want him to just get a mysterious package from some random guy and open it, and all of a sudden it's Christmas. Like, how terrible is that you can't have a birthday party? And yeah. I'm not saying that, like, I don't want it to seem like I feel sorry for this kid in terms of, like, because I don't want it to seem like it's like a big charity and I'm like, I don't know, down on the fact that his dad can't afford it. Obviously I'm not. It's just like, I grew up in a like a home of divorce, and we were super poor, and like, I feel so bad for my dad because he wants to give me everything and he can't. Even now I'm 30 and he still wants to give me everything and he can't do that because he just doesn't have the money for it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's fine, but he doesn't like he'll it's never fine for him. You never want to not give your kids something. So I just want to help them out with that. I don't want to do it because I want to, like, show them that I can afford it, or I don't want to do it because I want, like, this kid to be thankful to me. If it's anonymous, if Heather doesn't even tell him who gives him the stuff, I would be fine with it. I don't even care. I'm sending it to Heather first, right? She can do with it what she wants.
Sure, sure.
I just want this kid to just be happy and just have a fucking birthday party. You're 12 years old, like... You need to have stuff like that in your life.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Like I said, I didn't really want to talk about it because the dad listens to the show. He's like a super fan.
Oh.
So I didn't want to like spoil the surprise in that fashion, and I don't want him to now listen to this and then feel really terrible. So please don't feel bad. That's not what I want. I really don't. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I'm really not shitting on you at all in any fashion. I just want to help you out with your kid. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it is. This is the thing. I've tried to explain this to people, but like being semi-famous on the internet is a really weird sensation. I'm sure you go through this all the time. I don't have a lot of friends in Calgary that I'm as close to and share a love of magic with as I do in the entire world, right?
Yeah.
Like, when I go to Portland and there's 30 people there and we're playing Werewolf and we're playing Cubes constantly and stuff, that's way different than when I'm at home in Calgary and I can barely get a fucking cube to fire.
Yeah.
And I don't play EDH because we don't have an EDH group. So this kid being part of like an EDH group, that's like a huge thing. And I think I can't be a part of this kid's group. I would love to play Magic with him. I don't even know this kid, but I would love to play Magic with him just to further proliferate his experience with the game. And also my experience with the game.
Nice.
I would love to play Magic with Heather and her group and the dad and you with your, like, but I can't, right?
Yeah.
So I'm basically just looking for a way that I can be a part of this guy's Magic group and make his Magic experience better, because Magic is hard enough to, you know, like, even now with it being super popular, people make fun of you, people judge you, you know, and that's always going to happen. And it's you know, it's hard to embrace your passions fully. And like I said, there might come a time where this kid doesn't have an EDH group to play with.
Yeah.
But I think right now I would just want to make sure that every experience that he has with Magic is a good one. I don't want him to look back on this and think, you know, I chose Magic over a birthday party and I didn't really have fun because some guy was an asshole.
And I regret it.
And yeah. I regret it.
Yeah.
Right? How terrible is that? I'm 12 and I regret going to a pre-release because I didn't get a birthday party. I don't want this kid to go through that. And maybe he's not. Right? But I'm just thinking about this and it's just like I said, it just breaks my heart, this story that I was told. And I just want to help. That's that. I just want to help these guys out if I can.
That's awesome. Know?
And like I said, like you brought up the fact that the cards are like there's really good money in those stuff. That literally just doesn't mean anything to me. If this kid opens, like those, have you seen the rumors online of the double of the fetch land in the land
yes.
spot? Yeah. If this kid opens fucking god packs all day and double fetch packs all day and opens a box of 15 foil mythic rares in every pack because of some printing error, I'm not going to be remorseful at all.
Yeah, you're going to be like super happy about it.
In fact, I'm going to be happier for him. Yeah. I want him to turn it into a fucking college fund. Like,
yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I think the world, especially the Magic community, needs more of that. And
I agree with you. You know what? I agree with you completely. The Magic the Gathering stream page, like twitch.tv/magic, the chat is fucking terrible.
Oh, it's disgusting.
Like, I could not even believe it. So at GP San Jose, somebody plays Alicia.
Oh my god.
And the entire chat erupts into transphobic and all sorts of just hateful shit.
Yeah.
I'm just like, why? Why do you have to make such a big deal out of this? Like, it's not even a big deal. You have to feel by bagging on everyone else. Like,
yeah,
like it's just so gross. And it demeans all of us as a community when members of it, or, like, whether they're good members or not is irrelevant. Like, when they behave this way, it reflects on all of us.
Yeah.
Like, Crackgate reflected on all of us as Magic
players. Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, and, like, the thing with me, too, is, like, I saw on Twitter, a good friend of the show and a good personal friend of some of us had to leave a store.
Yes.
Because a bunch of people were being homophobic and transphobic, and it was like, it was to the point that this person was like in tears, like upset almost. And like, how fucking terrible is that? I go to your store to just like draft, and then, and you know, there's like a limit to things. Like I said, like we've had this conversation before where it's like, if you're offended by green shirts or, you know, we've had this whole, like, there's a limit to, like, you can't just be offended. Like, it's not okay for anyone to be offended by everything. Like, there has to be a limit because it's a society. It's not just a, and I truly do believe that. But like I said, like, there, I'm not a fucking monster. Like, that's ridiculous. A, who fucking cares what the story is with this Alicia person?
Yeah.
And second of all, like, you realize that you're playing a game with zombies and fucking Courser of Crucifix, which is a person with a horse body, and you're murdering people and doomblading people, and these are fantasy. Like, why does that matter? Why is nobody talking about, you know, why, like, Mardu Scout isn't anatomically correct and only has three fingers? Like, why is there no goblin human right or goblin rights activist? Like, because that's fucking ridiculous. Yeah. And why is this any different? And to the point where you're alienating people of your own community, like. And then when you, as a Magic player, tell someone that you play Magic and they make fun of you and they alienate you and you don't like that, you think it's fine to alienate, like, an ally of yours?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this person is an ally of yours. You do not need more enemies. You play fucking Magic.
Yeah.
You're a grown-ass man who plays, or a woman who plays fucking Magic. You don't need more enemies already. The stigma that follows you around just by saying that is enough.
True.
And definitely you don't need to make enemies out of people that are in your community. They start in automatically in your corner.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. You know, we need to actually fight for each other. We need to be fighting for each other, not against each other.
Not with each other, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's really, really important. I think it's a message that we all need to kind of try to take to heart. And if you do see somebody being a royal fucking douche nozzle, smack them in the fucking head.
Absolutely. And so, that's, like, really difficult.
Dude,
that's,
like,
really difficult to do.
Yeah.
To stand up in a group like that. But I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of not getting involved.
But you know what?
But it's
the first time that someone stands up and you're there, you are 100%. As soon as they say, hey, stop being a dick, you're 100% going to be like, yeah, man, like, you're being a real prick.
Yep.
Like, you will instantly go to defense of somebody else. And I think that as a community, a lot of us are genuinely like that. Like, we're all genuinely nice, but a lot of us just don't want to rock the boat. So if a leader stands up and takes a stand, then you're going to have support. Don't be afraid to be the leader. People have your back, especially if what you're talking about is right.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, like, the way I look at it is, like, if somebody said that to a friend of mine, I would defend my friend no matter what they said. Whether I agreed with the person or not, I would defend Scott, right? Like, if somebody is talking shit about you, even if it's true shit, I'm going to defend you and just be like, look, man, stop being a fucking cunt.
Yeah.
You don't need to be a cunt. If you have a problem with Scott, maybe take it up with Scott or stop hanging out with Scott. Just stop being a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I, as I've matured, I've kind of learned, but that's the way I look at it now, is, like, me making you feel bad about something, like losing to this guy who can't play fucking control and watching him take 8-minute turns, me making him feel bad for that doesn't do anything.
No.
It doesn't make me feel better. It makes me feel like shit. It doesn't make him feel better. It makes him feel like shit. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't solve the problem. The problem is that I am going to time with a guy that doesn't know how to play a certain way. So it's just as much effort, if not less effort, to just say, hey, FYI, these are the things that you want when you dig through time on your own turn and have no fucking graveyard or lands. These are the turns you're trying to set up. Boom. We've just saved 5 minutes on the next match we play.
Yeah.
Took no effort at all, and now I'm not a fucking asshole.
Yep.
So it's like, oh, this Alicia person used to be trans, or is trans, or used to be, I don't know what the fucking story is, because I'm not interested, because I don't want to even begin to get into that discussion with people. It's just easier to just be like, fucking who cares? It's a Magic card. I, to be honest with you, had never looked at this card ever. Had never considered it. I never thought, oh, this appears to be a man in the art and with a girl's traditional name. Like, that never even crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Not even for a second. I didn't give a shit about that at all. Why do people give a shit about this? this is something that's so insignificant for what you're doing.
Yep.
You know?
No, I completely agree with you. So, anyways, I just think we all need to do better.
Yeah.
So, do better, absolutely. Community.
Absolutely. Somebody said something really astute, I think, last week, where I think it was Maddie from Heavy Meta, where he said something about, like, you can choose to build people up or you can choose to tear people down.
Yes.
But we're all better when we're together.
Yep.
So even Maddie, after obviously, you know, something happened, he's even choosing not to have a conflict or a confrontation. He's choosing to
take the high road.
Take the high road and just say, look, it's the world is better when we are better to each other.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. And right. I agree. Yep. I think he's absolutely right. So everybody needs to be better, do better.
Yeah.
And keep being better. Which yep. is, I think, really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
That's a nice message to end the show on.
That's a good PSA. I like that. I feel like we're, you know, doing something relevant here.
Yeah. And for the fans that were waiting till the end for Jeremy to show up, sorry, he trolled you. He, after waiting forever to get home, his car is not going to start. So he's obviously having a great time.
Super great time.
So, apologize, but he won't make it. KYT is traveling, and he wishes he could be here, but he won't make it either.
So you were just stuck with us all yeah. night, and you know what? I think it was sweet.
I think so, too. I didn't talk a whole lot about Cube. I did get some questions for it. So what I've been doing while we've been doing the episode is I made a really big change to Cube, probably 40 cards in, 40 cards out kind of thing.
Wow.
So if you are interested and want to talk about that, I'm sorry that I didn't get to it. But you can always check it out at cubetutor.com/viewcube/6972. That is my cube number. My cube number is 6972. And if you click on blog, it'll show you basically all the changes I've ever made. But you can draft on there. You can do sealed. You can do visual spoiler, shit like that. It's actually a great site, and I actually give a lot of kudos to the guys behind the Cube Tutor site. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, they do a really good job.
Yeah.
So. Nice.
Cool.
All right. Well, with that, I guess you will have us all back after the Pro Tour, and we will be doing our Pro Tour wrap-up. Hopefully KYT will join us for that, whether he's traveling or not. I'm sure he'll figure it out. And in the meantime, we wish him all the best of luck, and I hope he and his team of Jess and I don't know the kids, Xavier? Yes, I did.
Maybe, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's
sounds
it.
Sounds about right.
I hope that they all do really well, and I hope that they're comfortable with their deck choices and, you know, draft well and place. I would really like KYT to just break out on his first Pro Tour. Just fucking
absolutely.
Nail it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, that'd be sweet.
So, in the meantime, everybody, have yourselves an excellent weekend. Watch your Pro Tour coverage. I'll be watching. Tweet us. We will chat magic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Check out my stream tonight, the last one before the Pro Tour. And have yourselves an excellent week.
Oh, shit.
What?
Did you stop the recording yet?
Nope.
Fucking, okay, rewind. I've been asked to do a shit story.
Yes.
Okay, but we're going to mix it up a little bit tonight. It's not a shit story, it's a dick and balls story.
Cock and balls?
Cock and balls.
Cock and balls?
Okay, so today I really fucked up. I got my dick and my balls waxed. I have a girlfriend. We've been dating for a month, exactly. That's, side note, that doesn't seem like a very long time to be getting your dick and your balls waxed already. Anyway, I commented on how beautiful her pussy was and how smooth it was, and she said it was because she gets it waxed. She told me it hurt to have it done, and I joked with her about how next time she goes, I would get one too, to show solidarity and be there for her. So the day comes. This is a bad idea. The day comes when she's going to get waxed, And she calls ahead and asks they wax men. And they're like, sure, of course we do. And this is where my plan fell through. Because I was 100% sure they didn't do that shit for men. But they do! Yay! So we end up going to the salon, and I'm very nervous. But I figure I'm going to go through with it. She gives me an out, even. She says, you don't have to do that, babe. And I tell her, I told you I would do it, so I'm going to do it. Obviously, this is a man of principle. So this actually attractive woman in her late 20s comes and gets me. I was expecting some woman in, like, her 50s with a Swedish accent and Hans bigger than mine. And takes me in the back and tells me to get naked. Which I do, and she asks me to get up on the table. I lay down on the table with my male bits dangling all about. My nuts, for some reason, decide to hang down to my knees, which they don't tend to do very often. So in that regard, I feel very betrayed. Fuck you, nuts. She starts putting wax on the lower part of my stomach. Rips. Holy fucking mother of all that is evil. Who the fuck does this to themselves, I think? As a mixture of pins and needles covered with burning lava assaults me, and this tiny woman hurts me in ways I will never thought someone her size could. Then she keeps doing it, and it doesn't hurt any less. When she does it, she says it gets better. She was a fucking liar! Then, something strange happens. She starts grabbing my dick and moving it around to wax around it. Obviously, my penis is confused by what's going on. It's been around wax before, but in a different type of setting. Oh, and it thinks this is the right time to show off. So here I am with this woman fondling my penis as it slowly decided to become erect. Because when you have hairs ripped out of your body, that's the time to get erect, right? This is one of the least erotic moments of my life, to be honest. And she starts to do my nuts. Well, when I said it couldn't hurt worse, I was the fucking liar. It hurts worse, and this woman has a strange habit of slapping me after she pulls a slab of wax up. She keeps lightly slapping me wherever she just ripped hair out, as if to say, bad boy for letting me do this to you. And she does this on my nuts. Not pleasant, not pleasant to have the hair ripped from your scrotum. And then have some obviously sadistic woman start slapping them playfully afterwards. Fuck me. This could not get worse. Oh, but it does. The bottom inch of my penis has hair on it. So obviously that shit has to go. So she rips the hair out of my penis and slaps it. And well, that doesn't go so bad, really. My penis has been confused by her holding it so much. She does it again and again and again. And bam, she rips that shit off. And bam, she slaps it again. She's slapping my penis, and my penis is thinking, shit,
that was actually kind of nice.
Next thing I know, Mr. Happy is jumping around and spitting cum all over the place.
Oh my god.
The nice woman starts to laugh and put her hand, this is amazing that this woman does this. The nice woman starts to laugh and puts her hand under my penis, catching most of the cum, but still laughing so hard I think she's going to cry. I apologize, and apologize, and apologize, and apologize. She is still laughing and takes a towel and cleans me up. And she tells me I didn't do anything wrong. It's a natural reaction, all while milking my cock. I'm like, cool. So other people have done this? She laughs and says, fuck no. You're the first one. But it's still all right. Don't be embarrassed. She has me get up on all fours. And then she waxes my ass crack and the rest of my ball. Yep, that was the highlight. So she keeps waxing, going over little bits as she feels around my nether regions, and finally she finishes the job. And you would think my penis would just stop doing this shit, but no, it stays erect the entire time, even after coming. She finishes by putting oil on me at the end and massages it in, even my erect penis, jerking it for a bit, and then just like that, it's over. She takes a towel, she wipes off all the oil and other stuff, and that's it. She gives me her card, and she tells me to come back when it's grown about an eighth of an inch for another wax. I say, for sure. I'm never going back again. Ever. Obviously. She takes me up to the front to pay, and my new girlfriend is waiting, and she asks me how bad it was. And I say, it wasn't so bad. That's the first of many lies I will take to my grave over this day. I tipped the salon woman $20 for being cool and not wigging out and having me arrested when I came all over her. Sometimes I hate my penis. the woman who waxed me tells my girlfriend I was awesome during the whole thing and that she will love my new look. Which was true. She loves it, and it's not bad being bald down there. But at what cost for my hubris? Scarring some poor salon worker for eternity seems like a pretty big price to pay.
Wow. Just wow.
Oh my god.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to save this email. And anytime Megan asks me if I want to go with her to the waxing place, I'm just going to send her this.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, man. So, yeah. That's the best I could do. Sorry for those of you that waited for Jeremy. That's the best I could do.
That was totally worth it. Totally worth it.
Thanks for joining us. All the stuff that Scott said about the next episode and everything is still correct. Feel free to join us next time. You can find us both on Twitter at Mr. Scotty Mac and or at JBoosh. And again, thanks.
You can find us on Twitch at the same identities.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Ka-ka!
Ka-ka!